Merry Christmas. I am not speaking to him, Rosie thought resentfully as she curled up on a sofa in the great room and observed her father sitting in his armchair frowning. He's a great giant ass. I'm not speaking to her, Quentin thought irritably as Rosie glared in his direction. She is a fucking spoiled brat. There was a loud crash, and Neville toppled out of the fireplace and sprawled onto the rug, clumps of snow rolling off his cloak.
Look who's dropped in, Quentin announced dispassionately. Can't even climb out of the fucking fireplace.
Rosie looked off in the opposite direction. Oh, great, Neville thought furiously. It's Snape's evil twin and the muggle bitch from hell. They better not think they're humiliating me again. He stood up with as much dignity as he could muster and sat down on the opposite couch. Be polite, he reminded himself irritably. Don't stoop to their level.
Oh, Quentin, he said nicely and took off his top hat. How are you, Rosie?
Dad, Rosie pronounced loudly without looking at Neville. Elizabeth doesn't want everybody in the whole world here. She told me so herself.
I hate her, Neville thought wrathfully. I hate her. She's worse than a Slytherin. They'd have to invent a whole new house for her. The house symbol would be a pitchfork, and the colors would be black and blacker, and the common room would be in the pit of hell.
Elizabeth's the one who invited me, Neville responded loudly. She sent me an owl and told me to come make Remus behave.
Neither father nor daughter appeared pleased by this statement.
I don't see any owl, Rosie replied haughtily. You made that up.
Who needs you? Quentin barked out rudely. I can make him behave. You mean like you did in that graveyard?
Neville yelled out nastily, and both of them jumped to their feet.
And what the fuck would you have done, you toad-loving, sheep-shagging, motherfucking son of a bitch?
Quentin bellowed furiously.
I would have stunned him, Neville responded loftily, ignoring the plethora of insults. He can't concentrate as well when he's about to transform. I wouldn't have run up any old tree, he finished triumphantly.
Rosie shuddered visibly.
Remus! She screeched. Get out of here! Dad's gonna kill Neville, or Neville's gonna kill Dad, or they're both gonna kill each other!
Quentin and Neville were nearly nose to nose when Lupin stalked out into the room, shoved them apart, and started shouting.
Holy effing mother of Jesus! He yelled out. Elizabeth's gonna have a damn baby, and I've got the fucking third Voldemort war out here! Without Voldemort! I'm nervous as all bloody hell, and you two blinding cocked up tossers are not helping!
He snarled as he snatched up a poker from the fireplace and flung it across the room, taking out an entire tea table's worth of china that was in its trajectory.
And you two do not want me to get out my wand.
Neither Neville nor Quentin, who had just been arguing their superior ability to handle Lupin, opened their mouths.
No, Rosie put in quickly. We don't want that.
When the hell is bloody Sirius when I need him?
Lupin screamed.
He's dead. That's where he is. That sodding motherfucker's dead.
He turned and stomped back out of the room, and no one spoke for at least 3 minutes.
Well, Rosie finally said, I guess maybe Elizabeth did send you an owl. I can't imagine why she thinks he's freaking out, though.
Yeah, he's all yours, Quentin told Neville pleasantly.
Have at it.
Nothing's gonna calm him down, Neville replied dolefully. Nothing. He's scared to death and until the baby's born and Elizabeth's okay. This is how he's gonna be.
These dire predictions were interrupted by the voice of Lucretia hollering down the hall.
You better straighten up, she screamed threateningly. You're making her nervous. Lord almighty, you're making me nervous. You go on to bed or something.
Go to fucking bed yourself, you sodding muggle cow,
Lupin yelled back and Quentin winced.
I'll operate your great black ass right back to the damn plantation.
What kind of prejudice bullshit is that?
Lucretia screeched.
I'm telling Mr. Quiller, yes I is.
Lupin shouted something unintelligible, and Lucretia rushed into the room, covered head to toe in gallons of fettuccine Alfredo.
I'm going to kill him, she shrieked as she pawed noodles from her eyes. I'm going to kill him! He can't be saying that prejudice bullshit to me,
she said ominously to Quentin.
It's against the law. Yes, it is.
Neville imagined Lupin probably wasn't particularly concerned about muggle law, even on a good day, but looked at Lucretia's round, glowering face and decided to keep this to himself.
He isn't trying to be racist, Quentin told her in a conciliatory tone. I gave him Gone with the Wind to read once. That Egid probably thinks you actually grew up on a plantation.
Lucretia let out a great snort of disgust and went back towards the bedroom, and Lupin stalked back in, flung himself dramatically onto one of the couches, and put a pillow over his head.
Say, who's that lady you're yelling at anyway?
Neville said hastily.
Lucretia,
Lupin mumbled solemnly from beneath the pillow.
Cook, midwife, and Cerberus.
She guards the gates of hell?
Like the three-headed dog himself, he replied gloomily and sat up. Sorry, she's making me crazy. Elizabeth's feeling horrible, and I can't do anything to help her.
Rosie gave him a sympathetic look.
There isn't really anything guys can do about this kind of stuff, she said kindly. Anyway, Elizabeth's a really strong person. She can handle it.
That's what her whole fucking family thinks, Lupin snarled. I'm not talking about you, Rosie. This started before you were born. Elizabeth's a strong person. Elizabeth's brave. She's tough. She can take care of herself. Oh, and her sodding sisters, too.
He put on a familiar grating falsetto voice.
Because I'm soul-sucking motherfucking Lady Caroline, and I'm too busy preening for my next social event to bother with those little brats. I'll certainly find time to criticize and shame her, though, till she feels so badly about herself she's certain she's headed straight for hell if she puts one toe out of line.
Quentin started to interject something, thought better of it, and sat back down in his chair.
Do go on, he told Lupin dispassionately.
Elizabeth is the responsible one, you know,
Lupin yelled in Richard's booming, self-righteous voice.
Sensible! No need to worry about her feelings. Who knows if she even has any? She needs to be doing her duty, I say. Anyhow, I've much too much stuffed pheasant to eat to concern myself with it.
Rosie started inching herself slowly out of the room.
Sit down, Lupin growled, and she rushed back to the couch. I'm not finished here.
Rosie gave Neville and Quentin a look that clearly said, do something.
What are you worried about it? Quentin barked out. She's gonna do me next.
He was given a reprieve when Lupin began ranting in a whiny Cockney voice that was unmistakably Victor's about how dreadfully bossy Elizabeth was, since she expected him to sleep in his own bed, not drink himself into an early grave, and quit fucking other women.
And she's always going on about me getting a bloody job. She's a right proper bitch. How am I to get a bloody job? I'll have to start working.
He paused to take a breath.
Now it's going to be you,
Rosie told her father knowingly.
What are you talking about?
Lupin said irritably.
And what does this have to do with Elizabeth?
Apparently, we are not allowed to speak, Quentin told Neville and Rosie impassively, unless it concerns Elizabeth. See that you don't forget.
Lupin looked pleased that Quentin had figured this out and offered him a small concession.
We'll just skip over you, he snarled. I don't want to get worked up about this.
No, no, Quentin replied gravely. You certainly don't want to get worked up.
Pay attention!
Lupin shouted at Rosie and Neville, who were both studying the carpet pattern intently.
When I met her, I decided I was going to make her happy and take care of her. That's what I thought. This is all I've ever wanted to do!
He finished in a menacing voice, and the other three nodded their heads quickly.
This fucking muggle mammy cookwoman does not understand this.
Well, don't worry, Neville blurted out in a frightened voice. She'll be fine. Honestly, the old muggle geneticist I worked with, you know, he told me muggle women hardly ever die in childbirth anymore.
Hardly ever die?
Lupin replied in a strangled voice.
Yeah, Neville said reassuringly. You know, not nearly so much as they used to.
Lupin was so horrified by this that, thankfully, he could not even speak.
What the fuck are you doing? Quentin bellowed, and Neville scowled at him. Trying to make him feel better, he replied hotly. What are you doing?
Make him feel better, Rosie screeched, by telling him she's probably going to die.
Well, I didn't say she'd probably die. I said she probably wouldn't,
Neville responded obstinately. Lupin jumped up and started pacing around the room, and within 3 minutes had set a chair, a small rug, and a vase on fire by looking at them.
Dispone, dispone, dispone,
Neville said hastily as he ran behind him, frantically waving his wand.
Stop looking at things!
Lupin's response to this was to fling himself defiantly on the couch again and put the pillow back over his head.
There! I can't look at anything! Are you happy?
He shouted at Neville.
Parks!
Quentin yelled, and Parks materialized, as he generally did, out of nowhere.
Get Remus some damned fire whiskey, he barked out, and hurry it up, will you? He's batshit crazy!
And you are now just realizing this, Parks sniffed disdainfully. My word, you certainly catch on quickly. And do not throw the fireplace pokers,
he told Quentin loudly, as he glanced at the shattered remnants of the china and the poker embedded in the opposite wall.
I have told you this before.
Quentin closed his eyes and muttered something that included the words old, strangle, and kill.
Get my owl, he shouted, and some parchment and quill pen and bottle of ink.
I am not touching that bird, Parks replied haughtily. I have told you this before. Get my damn owl, Quentin bellowed wrathfully, and Park stalked off in high dudgeon.
I met someone today you'd like,
Lupin announced coolly to Parks when he returned with the requested items and unceremoniously flung them in Quentin's direction.
You've identical personalities, all warm and fuzzy. I'm sure you'd be best mates if you weren't both devoid of human emotion. That, and you probably wouldn't approve of the fact that he's a vampire.
Parks drew back with an appalled expression and hurried out of the room.
You met Dragomir? Neville said angrily.
Yes, I met Dragomir,
Lupin replied crossly.
Why does this bother you?
Quentin picked up his quill pen and dipped it in a bottle of ink. Excellent. Keep talking to your new best pal and village pillaging buddy while I write your boss and tell him you're a fucking lunatic. I don't know why in the hell Elizabeth didn't write him in the first place.
I don't know why it bothers me, Neville replied heatedly.
Just in a bad mood. What were you doing at the castle today anyway?
Forgive me, Lupin replied coldly. I wasn't aware I needed your permission.
Ha! You did need my permission, Neville replied gloatingly. Dragomir went off and I was in charge of the castle.
Bully for you,
Lupin hissed.
You're practically the sodding headmaster. And you might recall,
he said in a voice that could freeze boiling water,
I am an Auror. I can go in any damned building I want, with or without your majesty's permission.
Isn't that Dragomir Tim's defense professor?
Rosie interjected worriedly.
He's not going to hurt him, is he?
Don't pretend you have a soul, Neville thought furiously.
It's Dragomir,
Lupin replied resignedly, and there's nothing wrong with him, except that I'm sure he's as much fun as a day at the beach with Loretta. He isn't a dark vampire.
You don't know, Neville interjected rudely. I see him every day, and I say he is a dark vampire, he finished triumphantly.
Well, since you're the leading expert on dark vampires now,
Lupin replied nastily,
you can go on my next damned assignment to Romania and hunt those bloody fuckers down, and I'll stay in your oh-so-prettily decorated classroom and teach children about flowers.
Both of them leapt to their feet and began circling each other.
Plants! Neville screamed. Magical plants! It's herbology! And you needn't sound off like I'm some Nelly with a namby-pamby job and you're some badass vampire killer!
He is a badass vampire killer, Quentin remarked cheerfully. He was quite pleased to see Lupin and Neville turning on one another, as he tucked a rolled parchment into his owl's leg and shooed her towards the window. Everyone fell silent when Elizabeth flounced into the room in her bathrobe.
What is wrong with you two? She shouted. I asked you to help me with him, not make him worse,
she yelled furiously at Neville, who quickly sank back down on the couch looking guilty.
And you're supposed to be petting on me and making me feel better, she screamed at Lupin, not shouting at everybody.
Solange said when she was in labor with the twins, Quentin was wonderful to her.
Quentin!
She shrieked.
He was,
Lupin replied incredulously, and Quentin favored him with a smile that could only be described as demonic.
You get back in his bed, missy, Lucretia hollered from down the hall. I done told you, get yourself back in his bed.
Oh, let me alone, I'm tired of that room,
Elizabeth wailed and burst into tears, and Lucretia appeared with her hands planted on her broadly swaying hips.
Now look what you done, she bellowed at Lupin. You done got all fussed up. You the worstest husband I ever seen.
He's not, Elizabeth screeched. He's not. Leave him alone,
she glared over in Lupin's direction.
You drink some fire whiskey and calm down, she yelled as she huffed back down the hall.
Lupin appeared utterly confused.
Is she mad at me or not?
He asked Quentin in a bewildered voice.
I don't know, he replied agreeably. I'm enjoying the irony of Elizabeth shouting at her husband to drink some alcohol.
I hope Elizabeth's not mad at me,
Rosie said nervously.
I don't want to go back there. I don't know what to do either,
she told Lupin firmly.
So don't feel bad. You're a great husband. Elizabeth always says so, and you know she doesn't say stuff she doesn't mean.
Maybe she's got a heart after all, Neville thought grudgingly. I mean, like, buried down really, really deep underneath that great big pile of evil.
Remus,
Rosie hissed conspiratorially.
Can I talk to you?
About what? Neville thought immediately. Not that I care. Because I don't care. Because I hate her. No matter how pretty she is. 6 o'clock, I'm out of here, Kingsley thought to himself with a relieved sigh. The morning had started off most unpleasantly, with 4 hours spent in the company of the Gringotts goblins over the Wizard Run bank issue.
They had received a sound verbal thrashing for their vicious and unprovoked attack. Kingsley rather liked the sound of that. On an innocent order member of upstanding reputation. Well, he was innocent and upstanding then, Kingsley reminded himself. That was before the Bleeding Hogsmeade incident. Those idiots. This was followed by 2 hours of pissing and moaning from various members of the Wizengamot on the sad state of their chair cushions, 5 meetings with people he had to fire, and 2 interviews that went very, very badly. Somehow he could not convince the illiterate female troll it was not gender discrimination that made her unfit to work as a ministry librarian. His farce of a lunch at the food court consisted of 3 bites of a delicious elderwood loaf and 2 sips of wine, followed in quick succession by 3 desperate pleas from the security trolls to stop physical assaults on Percy Weasley, 2 attempts being made by his own siblings, and 5 interruptions from the elf servers who wanted it in writing that they never had to serve Lupin again. The warlock at the security desk, who was furious that he was not allowed to blast wands out of visitors' hands. The statue guards, who could not remove the words "Ginny Weasley thinks I'm a ponce" from Dumbledore's statue, the Unspeakables, who wanted him to examine a new prophecy they'd found, and Arthur Weasley, who delivered an impassioned plea for extra funding to research the function of the Muggle coaster. After lunch, he had signed a stack of pardons for a gang of elderly witches who apparently felt the need to spice up their dull, widowed existence by blasting graffiti on unsuspecting passers-by on Diagon Alley. Work done next year's incredibly lengthy and tedious budget. Met with 5 heads of state from various wizarding countries, each fellow he thought weirder than the one before. Received the Auror's reports, answered 124 owls, and then wearily recorded all of the events of the day in the Minister's Daily Journal, an imposing tome of frightening proportions that had been in existence for 800 years. He would rather have liked to skip a day, he thought, but the fact that his hands would be burned beyond recognition if he did so was somewhat off-putting. He was just waving his wand to extinguish the lantern lights in his battery-powered Muggle CD player, which, much to his secretary's distress, had been blaring Aerosmith for the past hour, when she thrust a parchment at him with a frown.
"You have an owl from a Muggle," she snapped, "and I'm leaving."
And just how does she know that, she thought irritably. The parchment had obviously been bought at Scrivenshafts, but then again, Dorinda did have fairy blood. The only Muggles he knew certainly did not correspond by owl. In fact, the only owl he'd ever received from a Muggle was Elizabeth's when she'd been fretting over her missing werewolf. And that bloody fucker was sitting in his cave scrawling out threatening letters to me while she's pleading for reassurance of his safety, Kingsley thought with a scowl. But he couldn't get too irritated about it. The letters were so unlike Lupin's usual courteous correspondence, he still kept them in his desk drawer for a laugh. He was not surprised when the second owl from a Muggle concerned the same person.
"Kingsley, Mr. Minister, or whatever the hell one is supposed to call you. My apologies for disturbing you while you're busy dealing with the motherfucking Wizengamot, creepy-ass goblins, security trolls, Percy Weasley, or whatever else it is the Minister of Magic does besides scare the piss out of that fucking toad lover Neville Longbottom. I thought you might want to know your most useful Auror. You know, the one with the innocent face, pretty blue eyes, and blonde hair that your gay, death-eating vampires all want to fuck. Is having a melting nervous breakdown in my living room. And I'd rather he not off my cook. I imagine even you and Harry couldn't keep him out of Azkaban for that one. Besides that, she's a damn good cook, and survived the Malfoy graveyard with her soul and enormous breasts intact, and I'm rather fond of her. Stop by if you can, will you? I'd be uncharacteristically grateful. It's number 12, Elgin Crescent Drive, London. Quentin Quiller." Kingsley started smiling and scratched out a reply. "From the Office of the Minister of Magic, Minister of Magic, Kingsley Johnson Shacklebolt, I'll post to Mr. Quentin Quiller, Muggle, author of most distressingly improper missives of Muggle sarcasm and profane language, unfit to be out to the Minister of Magic. Quentin, sorry about the heading. The Minister's parchment is enchanted, and that letterhead writes itself. It's so damned annoying, I even asked John Lupin to try to get rid of it. 3 hours of his shouting, and it's still there. Anyway, please feel free to send me all the sarcastic and profane missives you wish. They will certainly enliven my day, which you described rather well, I might add. Although I can't say as I've done anything to frighten Longbottom today. Then again, the day's not over. I'll be there in 20 minutes. I've got to get something to eat, and I suppose if he's trying to kill your cook, she won't be preparing dinner. If you start something before then, go on about how Albus Dumbledore always believed in him, and then tell him to straighten the fuck up. Kingsley."
"What's that?" Neville asked suspiciously, when a snowy white owl, sporting the Minister of Magic's red and gold crest on its feathery breast, rapped on the window. "It's Shacklebolt's owl, Remus. Must be for you."
"Tell him to bugger off,"
Lupin responded rudely as he polished off a shot glass of fire whiskey.
"That's all I'm drinking.
He gave Quentin a defiant scowl. I'm not telling him that, Neville yelled in an outraged voice. You're always getting me in trouble.
Don't give a fuck how much you drink, Quentin replied and snatched the glass out of his hand. I'll drink it myself. Anyway, the owl is for me.
He was pleased when Neville gave him a shocked and furious look as he strode over to pick up the parchment. But Lupin did not seem to care at all, since he merely got up and sidled very quietly down the hallway, apparently to spy on Elizabeth.
What's he writing to you about?
Neville demanded when Quentin sat down and began perusing the owl.
We're friends, Quentin replied with a smirk. Friends. Buddies. Best mates. Pals, just like you and Remus. In fact, I think we're going to blow up Nocturne Alley tomorrow after he conjures up a boatload of mutant killer flying frogs. By accident, of course. I hate you, Neville mumbled under his breath. Sorry, didn't catch that.
Nothing! Quentin rolled up the parchment, and Neville resumed looking at the carpet.
What is it?
Lupin said impatiently.
Got a setup going on here. Might miss something important.
He had been most displeased when Rosie stuck her head out of the guest room door next to Elizabeth's and furiously motioned for him to come in.
You shouldn't be hanging out in the hall spying on her anyway,
Rosie responded haughtily.
Elizabeth wouldn't like it.
Most people who are being spied upon wouldn't like it,
Lupin replied unrepentantly.
What is it, then?
Neville hasn't apologized to me,
she announced angrily.
He hasn't! And he said the most horrible things to me. He called me
the biggest muggle bitch on the planet. Yes, I know,
Lupin replied crossly.
I was with him, remember? He drank too much Felix Felicis.
Well,
Rosie demanded petulantly.
Doesn't even remember it.
Sure he does.
Then why isn't he embarrassed? I thought he'd be embarrassed to death,
she said heatedly.
And he hasn't even said he's sorry.
It's because he's not,
Lupin replied curtly.
Did you not pick up on this when you read the damned books? Neville's entire childhood was an exercise in humiliation. And here the girl he fancies props him up against a bloody wall like a great pillock and insinuates he can't perform in bed. You think there's anything worse than that to say to a fellow in front of a room full of people?
He gave her such a fierce look that Rosie dropped her gaze to her hands and blinked away a few tears.
You know how I am,
she mumbled lamely.
You know I've got a bad temper. You've never been mad at me before,
she added in a hurt voice. The expected apology and reassurances were not forthcoming.
I don't give a kipper's dick about your bloody temper,
Lupin replied unsympathetically.
Don't you know me this well after a year? I can't tolerate anyone being bullied and humiliated, especially Neville. You know I'm a good legilimens. Do you think I didn't know some of what he was thinking? Or how he was feeling? What you did was so fucking out of order, it's off the steaming charts.
It can't be that bad, Rosie thought frantically as she stared down at her lap. I can't. He's just being horrible to me because Neville's his friend, but maybe... Yeah, making him stand up against a wall and kind of saying he wouldn't or couldn't put out...
You're right, she said forlornly. You are. I'm really sorry. I'm going to tell Neville I'm sorry too,
she added when he did not reply.
You do that,
Lupin replied impassively.
And I hope you learn from your father's mistakes before you fuck up your life the same way he has. He'd tell you the same thing if you'd bloody well speak to him. You think he's an ass? You're exactly the same person.
Rosie started bawling.
I said I was sorry, she shrieked. Why are you being so mean to me? I thought we were friends.
We are friends, he said in a kinder voice. I've always liked you, and you know that. I'd like to see you happy.
I don't know how to be happy,
Rosie responded miserably.
I'm rich and famous, and guys think I'm totally hot, and I have everything I want, and I'm not happy at all.
It's because you're selfish,
Lupin replied gently and handed her his handkerchief.
It's just how you were raised. You've got to start working on it, though. You're going to end up awfully lonely.
I want to be different, she wailed unhappily. I do, but I don't know how to do it.
Effort, he replied firmly. That's all. You can do it. You're a very determined person, and you've never lacked courage.
He gave the snowy woods outside the window a wistful glance and went out the door. Rosie clasped her legs to her chest, her heart pounding. Am I really as bad as my dad? And how can I stop being selfish? I've never even cared that I was selfish, but I don't want to be lonely and miserable all my life. I'm going to apologize and make it up to him. Neville's the nicest guy ever, and he's funny and sweet and cute and brave, and, well, I think I might really be in love with him. And I don't know what I'll do if he won't love me back. When Rosie finally went out to the great room, however, she was surprised to find it empty and wandered hesitantly back towards Lupin and Elizabeth's room.
Shh,
Lucretia whispered from a rocking chair outside the darkened room.
I told Miss Elizabeth to have a glass of wine and try to sleep. I think she's sleeping a little.
There was a half-second pause before her shoulders began rolling animatedly and her dark brown eyes lit up with excitement.
Oh, she hissed out delightedly and licked her lips. Oh, hey, girl, you should have seen this man show up here. Oh, he one fine looking man. He all dressed up with a red silk tie and real shiny gold robes and a top hat. He handsome as the devil.
She paused to fan herself with the magazine in her hands.
And he a big man, she said meaningfully. Mm-hmm, girl, he's something. He a black man. Someone important, girl. I can tell.
Oh, Rosie stifled a giggle. That's Kingsley Shacklebolt. He's the Minister of Magic.
I knew it, Lucretia replied triumphantly. Anyways, Mr. Neville, he start looking all skin, saying he got to get home and check on his old mama.
Rosie kindly did not mention that Neville's old mama was 20 years younger than Lucretia.
And then this big man asked Mr. Neville if he can come stay with him in his cottage for a week while he do an investigation on that school. Oh, girl, I thought Mr. Neville gonna fall out dead on that floor. He starts stammering and yammering, his face like red Georgia dirt.
That man, you say his name Kingsley? Kingsley.
Them wizards got the weirdest names. Not that I cares. That man name can be molded on. I don't care.
Anyways, you daddy, he awful bad, she said happily.
He start laughing at Mr. Neville and that Kingsley wink at you daddy and say, my work for this day is done. I don't know what that all about. So I tells Mr. Quilla, it's sure rude when people has their own private joke and don't include nobody else in it. Yes'm, I did. That make Mr. Neville feel better. He look all hateful at your daddy, and he say, yeah, it rude as hell. That's what he say.
She chuckled. That Kingsley, he tell Mr. Neville he right, and he sorry.
He got this deep voice to put a shiver down your spine like a preach on Easter Sunday.
She sighed and fanned herself again.
Now, of course, Mr. Quilla, he ain't sorry. He look at Mr. Neville and say, can't you make up your own shit to say? That what Remus always say. And Mr. Neville pull out his wand.
She paused dramatically.
And your daddy grab up a fireplace poker. And that Kingsley yell out, Longbottom, put your wand away. Quilla, put that down. And both of them do it real fast.
She smiled smugly.
Then, Mr. Lupin come out of that room you two was in,
she clucked disapprovingly,
and he look at Mr. Neville and say, he just winding you up, Neville. He ain't going to your cottage. Then Mr. Neville start apologizing to Mr. Lupin and saying he ain't help him at all. Then Mr. Lupin start apologizing to him and say he appreciate him coming over. And then pretty soon they looking all sweet like sugar at each other. And Mr. Quilla give Mr. Lupin a nasty look and say, why don't you give him a kiss goodbye then? Girl, they just like a bunch of women folk,
she finished with satisfaction.
It was better than watching my stories.
Yes'm, it was.
When's Neville coming back?
Rosie blurted out. Lucretia smiled knowingly.
In the morning, lest Miss Elizabeth had that baby and then I going to send him an owl,
she said proudly. That big man showed me how to send an owl, she whispered and shivered with delight.
Oh, girl, I knew this day had to get better and it sure enough did. Mm-hmm, it sure enough did.
I certainly hope you aren't going to kill that cook,
Kingsley told Lupin pleasantly as they strolled the snow-covered riding paths around the grounds.
I thought she was rather nice. If you got to off someone, come over to the ministry and get after Percy. I promise I'll let you alone. He's getting into my lunch hour, and you know I'm not having that.
I'm not going to kill Lucretia,
Lupin replied sourly.
Don't know what the hell he was thinking when he wrote that. She just makes me mad. If I'd kill a defenseless old muggle woman.
He shook his head in disgust.
Well, I don't know about defenseless, Kingsley replied solemnly. Isn't she the one that threw boiling water on you and Quentin?
Oh, shut it. I don't know why I'm telling you anything,
Lupin responded amiably.
Anyway, I'm not killing anybody. Well, unless a Death Eater shows up at the dinner table. It's happened before, you know.
What you need is a duel, Kingsley said wisely. A long one. Excellent stress reducer.
Yeah, I'll drop Radu an invite. She's been a damn nightmare of a day, that's all. I haven't a clue how to help Elizabeth, and I can't fucking stand it. Lucretia keeps throwing me out of the room because I make everybody nervous, and I'm actually scared to death.
Ha, my brave Aurore, Shacklebolt smiled. No wonder Sirius used to call you a girl.
Lupin shrugged.
True, I can't say it ever bothered me, though. I'd rather be accused of being too sensitive than too aggressive. Makes me sound more human.
He said this very casually, and Kingsley, as he sometimes did when talking to Lupin, felt an emotion that wasn't pity, but more like sorrow. He's still bothered by that, he thought sadly, after all these years.
So, apparently, Elizabeth sent Neville an owl, and he dropped by to reassure me that muggles don't die in childbirth nearly as much as they used to. And I shouldn't worry, because she probably won't.
Kingsley shook his head and smiled.
And Quentin's too busy screaming at Neville to even talk to me, and when he does, he just tells me I'm crazy. Which I already know.
He sighed.
I don't know why he's suddenly got this problem with Neville. He's always liked him.
Does he get the profit?
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Answer the question, Kingsley replied firmly.
Of course he gets the profit. He finds wizard horoscopes hilarious, and he thinks the Daily Misbehavior Report is the funniest damn thing ever, for some reason. I ought to put him in it.
If he gets the profit, Kingsley told him sternly, then he read all about your grand misadventure with Neville, well illustrated with the colour photos of you two hanging on each other behind a bench, laughing like retarded schoolboys.
That's a muggle word. Where do you learn this shit?
From your wife, he replied readily. When Rita Skeeter wrote up that assault warrant, she claimed Elizabeth called her a retarded cow right before she slapped her. Had to get out my muggle dictionary. Lupin smiled in a rather disturbing manner at this.
Damn, I wish I'd seen her do it,
he said in a frankly salacious voice.
Slap Rita, that is.
That's rather perverted. Nice cloak, by the way.
Elizabeth bought it, he sighed gloomily. This colour is called periwinkle blue. Periwinkle blue silk with a fur collar. It's the girliest thing I've ever seen. Even Neville thinks it's girly.
I find it rather attractive,
Shacklebolt remarked mildly.
And our fanged friends in Romania will love it.
Anyway, he added when Lupin started frowning, back to the subject at hand. Quentin is pissed because you had a jolly old time playing with Neville, and he's jealous.
I like him.
But he doesn't strike me as the type who plays well with others or enjoys sharing his toys.
Well, you're right about that. It was just the same after Sirius got out of Azkaban and we went off to live in Tortuga. It was totally irrational. Then there was that...
His voice trailed off into a shudder. The infamous meeting they both insisted on. Sirius said it didn't go off well.
Didn't go off well, Lupin replied incredulously. It was a cataclysmic disaster of biblical proportions, and I wish somebody would obliviate it from my memory.
How bad could it be?
I'm not going into it. Let's just say it ended up with Quentin calling him a motherfucking piece of shit, who didn't give a damn about me and wasn't any better than the rest of his family, and then Sirius blew up his office.
Kingsley smiled broadly at this. I think Quentin was fine with Longbottom until you started this sweet little courtship, one where he hangs about your house all the time and you drag him along while you play Marauder and make my life difficult.
I suppose you have to put everything in a slash manner, since you're a damn queer,
Lupin replied cheerfully.
Is this your fantasy?
What? You and Neville? Please. If I begin to fantasize about you, why would I include someone else?
I've no idea what goes on in your head,
Lupin replied loftily.
You probably do. Anyway, I said if I were. Don't flatter yourself. And despite the fact that Quentin's jealous and Longbottom's tactless, it doesn't sound as if your friend's much for comfort.
Well, they can't help it. Quentin doesn't know how to be sympathetic, and Neville just has a propensity for putting his foot in his mouth. But he means well. He does. It isn't their fault.
Always everyone's defender, aren't you? Kingsley thought to himself.
It's just odd that...
Lupin's voice broke off, and he stopped walking.
Let's turn around,
he said gruffly.
Fine,
Kingsley replied calmly.
What always seemed odd to me, he said lightly, was that Sirius, the most infamously tactless member of the nobly nefarious House of Black, always knew the right thing to say if you were upset.
Quite amazed me. Very out of character.
Well, I don't know why he wasn't here today,
Lupin blurted out angrily.
There was that visit, or whatever it was. I've just missed him like hell. I'm awfully glad it happened, but it made him, I don't know, real again. Something like that. I keep expecting him to walk in the room, looking pleased with himself for hearing him yelling, Mooney, what the fuck are you? From some other room. I guess it doesn't help that we always live together.
Kingsley remained quiet.
It's ridiculous, really. This is about Elizabeth, not me, but I haven't felt this frightened and miserable since... Well, I don't know when, and I don't know what I expect anyone to say. There isn't anything to say. This is about Elizabeth, not me. It doesn't matter whether I'm upset or not,
he finished firmly. They walked a bit farther, and a light snow began to fall.
Well, it matters to me,
Kingsley replied gently.
And that, Lupin thought later, was all I really needed to hear. When Rosie entered the great room Christmas Eve morning, she discovered a flurry of activity. The servants, resplendent in their beaded red and gold silk Christmas finery, were bustling about everywhere, lighting pine and cider-scented candles, setting up the sound system for the Christmas carols, and piling sideboard tables with mince pies, treacle tarts, cherries jubilee, bread and butter pudding, apple cakes, and trifles, along with the requisite crystal bowls brimming with spiced mead and eggnog, and the bottles of champagne, wine, scotch, brandy, sherry, and fruit liqueurs. Well, that's odd. One of the sideboard tables was draped in purple and boasted heaping arrangements of pumpkin pasties, cauldron cakes, sherbet lemons, pepper imps, sugar quills, ice mice, shrinking sprouts, frog livers, Christmas pudding, birdie bots, every flavored beans, blood orange dreamsicles, and pumpkin, peanut butter, and strawberry ice creams. Dozens of very tall, multicolored goblets fenced in various bottles of fire whiskey, butter beer, gilly water, red currant rum, dragon's blood, and fairy and elf-made wines. There was a large pot of talking tea, which helpfully warned the imbiber when it might be too hot to drink, and two floating buckets of dandelion juice that seemed to be chasing one another. Rosie glanced toward the fireplace where Neville was sitting with Jamie, looking quite handsome in a scarlet red pleated cotton shirt with billowing sleeves and long shirt tails, his thick brown curls tied back with a shiny gold ribbon. They were engaged in a rather strange conversation about a purple carpet that had appeared outside the mansion's front door. I guess the baby isn't born yet, Rosie thought disconsolately. That sucks. Poor Elizabeth. She heard Lupin yelling something from down the hall and amended this to include, poor Lucretia.
I'm glad Dad put out all that wizard stuff, she said brightly and pointed towards the table. There's an awful lot of it. Is he expecting more people?
This, she thought, was a very friendly way to start a conversation, but apparently Neville did not agree, since he just sat back sullenly on the couch and looked out the window. Jamie stammered.
Well, Dad didn't do it. I told the servants to put it out. Ginny showed Lucretia how to order their stuff, and I guess these crabby elves deliver it on Tuesdays.
Thanks, Neville said in a pleased voice.
Thanks, that was really nice of you.
Really thoughtful.
Rosie was quite sure this last sentence had been spoken solely for her benefit.
Those food delivery elves are always nasty, Neville told Jamie knowingly. They're from Australia, and they've got some binding contract with the ministry. Nobody else can deliver food to private residences but them, so they know they can say whatever they want.
What kind of binding contract?
Jamie asked immediately. Of course you'd be interested in that, Rosie thought angrily. The least interesting bit of what he said. And why won't Neville even look at me?
To know, Neville shrugged as he levitated some shrinking sprouts, ice mice, and every flavored beans onto a plate that appeared out of nowhere.
You could ask Elizabeth. She got into it with them one day, started yelling that she wanted to see this contract, and that big one-legged fellow got really pissed and he started reciting it to her. I guess they have to show somebody if they ask.
He ate a sprout and took a sip of tea.
Do you want something? He said politely to Jamie. If I levitate it, we won't have to bother the servants. They look really busy, he added.
Well, don't worry about asking me,
Rosie announced loudly,
since apparently you're blind to something.
You have to eat those sprouts really fast, Neville told Jamie without the slightest acknowledgement that Rosie had spoken. If you don't, they shrink up into little hard rocks.
Ugh!
He shuddered as he spat out an every-flavored bean.
Meat. It doesn't sound so bad, but it tastes horrible.
Sounds bad to me. Who wants a meat-flavored jelly bean? Jamie replied cheerfully.
And I'm going to make those food delivery elves write that contract out for me next Tuesday. It'll be something magical, Neville informed him dourly. Like the Minister of Magic made a non-reversible binding agreement 300 years ago, or something like that. If it could be changed, I know Kingsley would have done it, because they delivered to his house, too, and he hates them. Remus said he shrunk them all down to ankle size one day, and one of his dogs ate one.
He shivered and made a face. There's always a loophole somewhere, Jamie replied stubbornly, and I'm going to find it.
Anyway, you could send me a goblet of fire whiskey and some ice mice, and hey, are those frog livers any good?
Well, Neville replied sheepishly as the requested items floated over next to Jamie.
They're supposed to be a delicacy, actually. Remus thinks they're great. Of course, he likes the meat-flavored beans, he added with disgust. I just can't eat one. I just keep thinking about Trevor.
A tall green and orange goblet, accompanied by a bottle of gilly water, sailed across the room and landed on the coffee table in front of Neville.
You actually drink gillyweed?
Rosie burst out furiously.
Sure, he likes it.
Jamie replied with a surprised expression.
You wouldn't know, Neville yawned, since you never asked me anything about myself. Since everything's about you.
Jamie began to look decidedly awkward.
Can I talk to you?
Rosie asked Neville quickly.
"About what?" he demanded suspiciously.
"It's private,"
she hissed, and Neville turned his back on her. "No," he replied loudly. "I'm talking to Jamie, and this is private." Rosie gave him an incredulous look.
"The rude delivery elves and beans that taste like meat and fog livers is private," she snapped. "Fine, don't talk to me then."
"Fine, I won't, because I can't stand you," Neville thought heatedly. Rosie stomped out of the room with a toss of her hair, and Jamie shook his head soberly at Neville.
"Just as well talk to her," he advised him resignedly. "She's not going to let up if you don't. I know."
"Yeah, but I don't know where she went," Neville protested quickly.
"Her floor," Jamie replied disgustedly. "Where else would she go?" "Seventh floor."
Gryffindor Tower is on the seventh floor, Neville thought irritably as he got up with a great gloomy sigh. She ought to be living in the dungeon.
"So I'm really, really, really sorry, and I'm never going to do anything like that again,"
Rosie finished determinedly.
"Never. I'm going to quit being so selfish. I'm not going to be selfish at all. I'm not."
She paused expectantly, since Neville had not spoken throughout her long, rambling apology.
"I don't believe you," Neville told her rudely. "And I don't care anyway. I met someone else I like a lot more that acts like a grown-up."
Rosie burst into tears and fled the room. "Oh, great," he thought angrily. "Great, now I'm the bad guy. Like she would ever be sorry about anything. Well, maybe if one of those giant pictures of herself she's got all over her room fell off the wall. Or she lost all her slutty clothes, Lavender Brown wouldn't be caught dead in." This might possibly be a decent evening, Quentin thought to himself as he observed the Mansionites at the dinner table dressed in their Christmas Eve finery. Particularly since Solange, who was wearing tight black velvet pants with an extremely low-cut, gossamer-thin ivory blouse over a snug cream-colored camisole, had her hand on his arm and was smiling at him provocatively. Or maybe just cheerfully, he couldn't decide which. She can't resist the chance to dress up and flirt at a Christmas party, and there isn't anybody else for her to do it with but me. She hates Henry, and Victor's an old soak, and Kenny's over there bawling about his damn dick again. God, I hate those fuckers. Lean over a bit more, will you? Excellent. Another glass of champagne, and she won't notice I'm staring. Well, fuck. Solange had turned away to Timothy, who was rabbiting on about one of his mates who was trapped at the castle for the holidays. "It's Christmas Eve. It's a party. Her dear darling sister and bestest friend is finally having a baby she's always wanted with the fellow she's loved in secret all her life. The same fucking son of a bitch who won't shut up about her and would lick crumbs off her ass if she wanted him to. It's absolutely nauseatingly romantic. However, Solange loves romance. This might just be the perfect setup for me."
"Quit leaning on me, Reginald!" Lady Fanshawe snapped irritably as she shoved the listing Reginald to a more upright position.
Reginald, as usual, merely stared blankly into space and did not reply.
"Huh!" Richard snorted as he cast a derisive glance his way. "I say it would take a crane to get it up on that old fossil! A crane, I say! I wager he hasn't had a biggie since 1910!
"Grandfather!" Jamie and Rosie yelled loudly, but everyone else, except for the dangerously glowering Lady Fanshawe, burst out laughing. Romance. Something to get her thinking about romance. Wait a minute, chocolate. I'll get that bloody werewolf to make some of his special chocolate and some truffles, and she'll never know. Perfect!
"Elizabeth's going to throw them both out,"
Solange whispered knowingly as she polished off her second glass of champagne.
"He and Lucretia have been at it for an hour."
"I don't know how she stood it this long," Quentin replied in a voice full of artificial sympathy.
"She better kick him out so he can whip me up those truffles."
"He's asked again."
"Shh," Solange announced gaily, and the table momentarily fell silent.
"When are you giving her that pain potion?"
Lupin shouted angrily from down the hall.
"Have you any idea at all what you're doing?"
"I told you there ain't no pain potion," Lucretia shrieked back furiously. "Maybe you wizards has one, but we women just has to suffer. That's what we does. Suffer."
"She's supposed to suffer. That is not happening. What the hell is wrong with you people?"
Everyone exchanged gleeful looks. The only thing more fun than fighting, they thought, was listening to other people fight.
"Don't you be calling us you people. You the one that ain't even a people. You ain't nothing but a big, bad, nasty-ass wolf."
"Who asked the fucking mammy cook for her opinion?"
Lupin yelled, and Solange smiled.
"That's done it,"
she told Quentin knowingly. There was a 3-second pause.
"Both of you get out," Elizabeth shrieked. "I said, get out!"
Glass shattered against a wall in the bedroom, and Lucretia stormed into the room, rolling both her shoulders and eyes in a dramatic fashion. Her fury, however, did not stop her from snatching up a few treacle tarts as she huffed angrily into the kitchen.
"I knew it,"
Solange said exultantly.
"Sure you did. perhaps you deserve a prize," Quentin replied immediately. He knew there was nothing Solange liked better than a surprise present.
"I do,"
she said archly.
"What's it going to be?"
"It's gonna be my..." "Get out here, will you?" Lupin hissed at him from the doorway. "Excellent. Fucking excellent. We'll be in the corridor where no one can hear us. Well, maybe Elizabeth. Hopefully she'll be in too much pain to listen." "Sure," Quentin replied amiably. "I'll be right there." "Oh, I ordered some truffles from the Fat Duck," he told Solange as he jumped to his feet. "I'll go get you some."
"That sounds great!"
she squealed happily, and he put on a concerned expression as he started towards the doorway. "Now, he mightn't want to do it. You better suck up first. Tell him how phantasmagorically wonderful Elizabeth is, and how Lucretia doesn't know bloody shite and she's definitely getting the sack. Then tell him how fucking tragic it is that that arrogant dead bastard he's decided to start pining over again can't be here for him, but you'll try your best."
"Come in here if you've something to say," Richard bellowed. "Can't abide sneakery."
"He doesn't want to come in here," Quentin shouted as he stomped over to the door.
"There's no such word as sneakery," Jamie told his grandfather knowingly. "It's sneakiness. You can't abide sneakiness."
Lupin stalked in the room and gave Richard a deadly look.
"I am not being sneaky," he snarled. "I would like to speak to Quentin without unsolicited comments from the Dueling Old Folks Club."
"No shit, Sherlock. I'd like to speak to you, too. Get back in the hall."
"Are you speaking about my boyfriend?"
Lady Fanshawe screeched as she pointed towards the pasty form of Reginald propped up in his wheelchair.
"Does it bother you to be around my boyfriend? Not jealous, are we?"
she crowed delightedly.
"I can't imagine anyone being jealous of him," Lupin replied spitefully, "considering the fact that he's dead."
"What? What?" Lady Fanshawe yelped and leapt to her feet. "He certainly is not. What a dreadful thing to say!"
"I'm telling you, he's dead,"
Lupin replied stubbornly and gave the propped-up figure a push.
10-12 hours at least. Probably longer. I'll bet he was dead this morning at breakfast. Not that we'd have had a reason to notice,"
he added nastily. "Fuck, fuck, fuck! How in the hell am I going to get these bloody truffles? Why are people always dying at my damn dinner table?"
"He's boring," Tim announced irritably. "That's the dullest dead fucker I've seen. He doesn't even look different." "Timothy!"
Solange giggled.
"What's your language?"
"There is something totally wrong with that kid. Well, obviously, look what his fucking father was. Suppose that's why Remus is giving him that tragic girly look. I don't know how I get through dinner at this place without puking."
"Man!"
Kenny wailed in a genuinely anguished voice.
"Super old dude's dead, man! This sucks! I loved him, man! He was funny, dude! Man, this sucks!"
He buried his face in his hands and started bawling. "Oh, for God's sake!" Henry snapped unsympathetically. "Shut up! You don't give a shit! He was like 9 million years old, Kenny. It's not like you had anything in common with him," Jamie said in a consoling tone, and Henry gave him a revolted look. "And now my son has buddied up with the resident drug addict. Perfect! Undoubtedly, it's from all the bonding time they've spent together while he drives Kenny's worthless ass to his all-expenses-paid personal mecca of retard booty known as Oxford." Quentin tried furiously to make eye contact with Lupin, but he was back to glaring at Lady Fanshawe.
"Man, we were like soulmates, dude," Kenny wailed. "Soulmates, dude! I loved him, man! Super old muggle!"
he finished with a keening howl. "Take some of your drugs," Jamie told him soothingly. "Then you'll feel better."
"Drugs aren't gonna numb this pain, man!"
Kenny shrieked.
"Super old dude understood me, man. He did. He was like..."
He stopped and stared hungrily at Reginald.
"Hey, maybe I can get his dick, dudes!"
he yelped happily and let out a maniacal cackle.
"And there you are," Henry said smugly to Jamie.
"Damn, damn, damn, I am never going to get those truffles." And now she's looking around the room for them. "Fuck, maybe I'll ask that gloomy lout Rosie's mooning over to make them. Nah, he looks pissed. Besides, he'd probably screw it up and bring in a herd of cattle to destroy my house. Fucking toad lover."
"Why in the hell did you bring a dead guy here?"
Quentin shouted wrathfully as Lady Fanshawe began emitting ear-splitting shrieks.
"We're having a motherfucking Christmas party, and you brought a bloody corpse to the damn dinner table!"
"He's not dead! He's not!"
Lady Fanshawe screamed angrily.
"What does he know?"
She and Lupin exchanged looks that Quentin could have sworn were nonverbal killing curses. Several cracks spattered out, and George, Harry, Arthur, and Ginny appeared in the middle of the room holding an orange peel, which had apparently been used as a portkey. "Wait a second, here's 4 more wizards. Arthur, he fucking loves me, and he feels guilty about that shooting bit. He'll definitely do it."
"Hey," George said cheerfully to the group at the table. "We want to see what's going on. Neville sent me an owl," he added to Lupin,
who ignored him completely and turned on Neville instead.
Neville!
What? Neville shouted back angrily. Quit yelling!
Tell these damn muggles this fellow's dead, since I wouldn't know a dead person when I saw one.
He snarled at Lady Fanshawe, who promptly threw her cider at him. You mean super old muggle? Neville replied, since he couldn't remember Reginald's name, and wandered over to peer at his grayish visage. Yeah, he's definitely dead, he said firmly.
Yes, yes, certainly dead, certainly, Arthur nodded reassuringly. Seen a lot of dead people myself. Say, that tree's got eclectic lights. Must have an enormous plug. How do they do it?
His eyes lit up wildly as he hurried over to inspect the tree.
Put your finger in the socket and you'll find out,
Lupin told him crossly, and George, predictably interested, hurried over to inspect Reginald himself.
Yup. Permanently obliviated, he chimed in happily. Worm food! Toast! Avada Kedavra! Assumed room temperature! Gone on!
Quentin hurried over to give Arthur an effusive greeting and handshake, and Arthur beamed broadly.
Can I have a word in the kitchen? He said in an undertone. Certainly, Arthur replied happily.
What the hell is he up to? Lupin thought suspiciously as Quentin and Arthur slithered out of the room.
Done like dinner,
Solange added gleefully.
Bit the biscuit!
A few stifled bursts of laughter came from around the room.
Seen the Grim,
Ginny put in cheerfully.
Sorted into the house fraternity.
Snuffed it, Harry smiled. Croaked, cashed in the chips. Kick the bucket, Richard announced happily.
Flatliner, Jamie piped up, metabolically challenged,
Henry added dryly. All pretense was abandoned, as everyone except for Lupin and Caroline burst into gales of laughter.
Checked out, man. Dirt nap dorm, dude. Bought a pine condo, Kenny yelped happily.
Now, even the servants were laughing.
Accio Jesus!
Teddy piped up loudly, and everyone screamed with glee. Shit! George gasped out to Harry. I love this place. There's a bloody corpse sitting at the dinner table on Christmas Eve. Look, that big old guy in the green sweater is still eating.
That's right. Muggles are great.
I never had fun like this at the Dursleys, Harry replied solemnly. I wish Vernon would have died at dinner. You know, Dudley would have kept on eating. He'd have finished on Fernon's plate, too.
Jamie looked at Reginald and made an awful face.
Didn't you know he was dead? He yelled at his grandmother. That's totally gross. How'd you get him out of his room?
Lady Fanshawe scowled ferociously at this.
I had Albert carry him, she shouted. I thought he wasn't saying much today. I finally found my true love, and now he's gone. I'll never get over him. Never!
She wailed and looked pointedly at Richard and Lupin.
I think we're meant to be jealous, Richard whispered conspiratorially to Lupin. Don't give her an inch, old boy.
There is something really wrong with you people,
Lupin replied irritably, and walked off towards the kitchen, where he treaded noiselessly along the side of a refrigerator and stopped just a few feet from view.
Of course I can make it. Mine's just as good as his. Better, really. Everyone says so,
he heard Arthur announce cheerily.
What the hell does he want him to make?
I really want to cheer her up,
Quentin told Arthur somberly.
She's been in depression. It's been rather awful. I'd ask Remus, but I hate to bother him,
he finished in a concerned voice.
You lying piece of muggle shit. You scheming, conniving, troll-fucking son of a damn dead banshee. You don't give a dog's dinner about bothering me, and I know exactly what you want him to make, and why.
I don't want to know now, Quentin added quickly. She might not take it well. She's been awfully bad-tempered lately. Can't ever keep a woman happy, Arthur agreed. My lips are sealed.
Go ahead and whip it up then, Arthur. You've never made any magical chocolate in your life, you great ginger git.
Arthur cleared his throat a few times and paused dramatically. And from his hiding spot next to the refrigerator, Lupin closed his eyes in disgust.
Let's see. Now then, Choco hoo-ha!
What? Lupin was quite pleased when he strolled into view and spotted the ever-inscrutable Quentin with a ghastly look on his face and Arthur pale and sweating.
What the fuck is that?
Quentin screamed in a high-pitched voice and gestured wildly at the long table.
Oh my, Arthur said weakly. My word, that wasn't what I had in mind at all.
Lupin, who was quite certain he was far too nervous to find anything amusing today, took one look at the table and fell over laughing. There, in all its genital glory, was an astonishingly large chocolate vagina cake on a silver platter. It's close to the size of an ottoman, he thought to himself. Classy!
The cake was quite intricately done, complete with a grapefruit-sized clitoris, shaped with a sculpted coffee-colored glaze, inner and outer lips sprinkled with shredded bits of coconut, and thick curly pubic hair swirled out of stiff chocolate frosting. Arthur grabbed Lupin's shirt collar in desperation.
"This isn't funny!" he screeched violently. "I've got to get rid of it! You've got to help me!"
"Forget it," Lupin replied cheerfully. "Damn, that's even better than when you shot him."
"Remus, for God's sake,"
Quentin said in a voice that managed to sound both pleading and threatening.
"I know what you wanted that chocolate for," Lupin replied insolently. "I can't believe you've even think of it. It's just fucking wrong."
"You bloody bag of bollocks," Quentin shouted. "I'll shoot 50 silver bullets straight through your high and mighty Gryffindor heart. I'll..."
"No, you won't," Lupin hissed, grinning. "Because I'm the badass vampire killer."
Quentin made a strangled sound of rage and started around the table.
"Fine, I'll get rid of it,"
Arthur howled angrily. Lupin sprang up onto the bench, neatly avoiding Quentin's lunge at him, and with a bang, Arthur's wand flew into his hand. "I am permanently, totally, up the ass screwed," Quentin thought frantically. "There's no chance in hell this bloody twat cake is going to disappear now. She's going to figure it all up. That stupid werewolf and his damn morals. I hate that bloody motherfucker."
"Permanente omio!"
Lupin yelled triumphantly as he pointed his wand at the genitalia cake.
"Evanesco!" Arthur shouted wildly. "Evanesco! Evanesco!"
"It won't go,"
Lupin told him with a smirk.
"I've got a permanent sticking charm on it."
All of the yelling, especially the sound of spells being shouted, brought the entire dinner crowd to the door of the kitchen, where they crowded together in a great scrum. George, Neville, and Jenny, who had reached the door first, were wedged in the frame and unable to proceed further.
"Budge up, you Greek troll," George said irritably to Neville. "You budge up," Neville replied heatedly. "I can't move."
Jenny dropped to the floor and darted into the room with an exultant squeal, only to skid to a screeching halt in front of her father while George ran up behind her with a delighted expression on his face.
"Your father's made us dessert,"
Lupin told them pleasantly.
"Wasn't that thoughtful of him?"
"Dad!"
Jenny screamed.
"Dad, how could you? What the hell is wrong with you?"
"Oh, I was trying for chocolate,"
Arthur howled frantically.
"Magical chocolate!"
"So how'd you end up with that?" George said with interest. "What were you thinking about when you said that spell?"
"Well,"
Arthur ran a nervous hand across his balding pate.
Well, I wasn't thinking about that. Well, I couldn't remember the spell, actually. Apparently I said it wrong."
Shala tried to herd the quadruplets out of the room, but it was too late.
"Mom, is that a vagina cake?"
Nicholas shrieked.
"Cool,"
Timothy announced as he hopped on the table.
"This is ace. Somebody needs to make a big dick pie to go with it."
"Ew,"
Rosie squealed in horror.
"Oh, gross. Oh, wait till Lucretia finds out it's in her kitchen."
She raced enthusiastically out of the room.
"Awesome, man,"
Kenny shrieked ecstatically.
"Awesome. This is the best cake ever, dude. I want the first piece, man.
I want some pussy cake."
Neville gave the cake one look and stared fixedly at the wall behind it.
"Stop,"
Arthur moaned and sat down helplessly on a stool.
"Stop. Make it go away,"
he mumbled and closed his eyes. Solange stared suspiciously from the cake to Quentin and to the cake again.
"You said you bought me truffles, the fat duck,"
she yelled threateningly. "Did I say that?" Quentin replied desperately.
"Yes, you did. And there aren't any truffles. You had Arthur make that thing because you want him to make some magical chocolate, and he muffed up the spell."
She threw her glass of champagne at Quentin and flew out of the room.
"He muffed up the spell!" George wheezed and fell onto his knees. "Oh my God, I love this fucking place."
"I would have done it too, man," Kenny told Quentin sympathetically. "Sometimes you just gotta drug a chick to make her shaggy, man. I gave this retard chick some Oxycontin, dude. She got stoned and gave me a blowjob, man.
That was when I had my dick, dude,"
he added solemnly. "And now I have officially lost all will to live," Quentin thought to himself. No one said a word when Lucretia pushed her way through the crowd into her kitchen. First, her head began jerking back and forth. Then her shoulders started rolling threateningly. And finally, she added in the hip swaying, until her entire body appeared to be in the thralls of some sort of anger seizure.
"I want to know,"
she said ominously.
"Who done made this cake? Who done made this cake that makes fun of us big black girls and disrespect our private parts?"
Arthur looked up at Lucretia with an expression of pure and unadulterated terror.
"Remus,"
he began in a beseeching voice.
"Mine is just as good as his.
better, really. Everyone says so,
Lupin replied in a mocking voice.
Don't use that tone with me, boy, Arthur spluttered angrily. I remember when you were a skinny pup who couldn't get up for drill because 5 a.m. was too early and you thought your new lieutenant was some big girl's blouse, he shouted furiously. I hauled him up and punched him in the face, he announced smugly to the crowd. He got up every day after that, I tell you. I wasn't taking any guff from those boys. I told Albus when he gave me that company I'd heard about those marauders.
He spat out this last word as if it were the vilest of epithets, and George shook his head sadly.
Dad, 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 he sighed.
Arthur made the cake,
Lupin snarled in an extremely nasty tone of voice.
I saw him do it. He hasn't any respect for women. Or people of different races. Or anyone who's overweight.
Lucretia took in a deep breath and charged Arthur like a bull. There was a huge cacophony of screaming, and when the din had died down, she was rubbing her hands together with a satisfied smile, and there was an Arthur Weasley-shaped hole in the wall next to the back door. Having finally lost interest in the vagina cake, since Lucretia obstinately refused to let anyone eat it, the crowd returned to the great room to help themselves to sweets and drinks and enjoy the spicy Christmas scents, Christmas carols, and roaring fire.
No, no, Richard chuckled fondly as he patted his enormous girth. You boys know you shouldn't be doing that.
George, Kenny, Teddy, and Tim were merrily decorating Reginald up like a Christmas tree. Ornaments had been attached to his skeletal remains with permanent sticking charms. 2 large candy canes were hooked over each large mottled ear. Mistletoe had been stuffed up his nostrils, and he was encircled with white lights that blinked madly. A large Santa Claus hat was placed on top of his pallid bald head. And, as an extra festive holiday touch, George tossed colored glitter all over his wheelchair.
That's disgusting,
Ginny told her brother cheerfully as she strolled past.
Watch, this is going to be the best part,
George whispered as he levitated Reginald in his wheelchair about 6 feet in the air and began slowly circling him around the room. Shrieks of horror filled the air and the quadruplets began bawling.
Stop, Lady Fanshawe screeched. Stop, stop, Quentin, make them stop.
Quentin merely gave Reginald a disgusted look and stomped out of the room.
Cut it out, Neville snapped as Reginald floated above him, his feet dangling disconcertingly near the top of his head.
He might have found the flying Christmas corpse more amusing, he thought, if Rosie hadn't been sitting on the other end of the couch with some falsely forlorn expression on her face.
It's crawled up your ass and died, George asked cheerfully as he sat down beside him, and Neville glowered at him angrily.
Oh, right. Of course it's me who's being a prat. Of course it is. She gets away with everything. That is the phoniest face I've ever seen. She needs to take lessons from Tim on faking stuff. And obviously George is going to fall for it. No guy will ever think she's wrong.
Nothing, Neville replied loudly. I'm in a really good mood, actually.
Did I tell you I've got a date?
Yeah, I do. With the new ambassador from Romania, he said triumphantly.
She's really pretty. She's great at defense. And she even likes plants.
An extremely tense silence filled the room, and Reginald in his wheelchair dropped unceremoniously to the floor with a crash.
Well, that's great, Neville, George replied casually. Incredibly awkward and inappropriate that you bring it up with Rosie sitting here on the couch, though.
Neville felt his face burning. And now she's humiliated me again, he thought wrathfully. Again! Everyone in the room was staring at him with disgusted looks on their faces, and Lupin was actually giving Rosie some sort of horrified, sympathetic look, as if he felt quite awful for her.
I can't believe it. I should have known he'd take her side. I hate her. I hate her.
Fine, Neville shouted and jumped to his feet. I knew you were all going to take her side. So it is when you're a girl and you're really pretty. Nobody thinks you can ever do anything wrong, he added vehemently, no matter how bad you treat people or how selfish you are.
I told you I was sorry, Rosie shrieked and leapt up as well. And I was sorry, but I only did it because you hurt my feelings when you ran out of the room.
I hurt your feelings? Neville thought disbelievingly as the listening crowd gave him even nastier looks. I can't believe she's trying to blame that shit on me. I can't believe it. Maybe somebody needs to humiliate her so she knows what it feels like.
Well, Neville yelled back, maybe I wouldn't have been embarrassed if you weren't jumping on me all the time because you're some desperate...
Neville, Lupin broke in threateningly. Don't say another word. Rosie isn't humiliating you. You're doing it to yourself.
Stop! Neville replied angrily. Stay out of it!
No, Lupin said wearily. Will you please calm down? You don't have to bother with him, Rosie screamed. I don't care what he thinks about me because I hate him too. I wish that snake had swallowed him up!
Ouch!
Harry said, and George winced. Neville was so infuriated by this statement, he actually couldn't speak and stormed off into the kitchen. I'm having some fire whiskey, he thought wrathfully, and then I'm going home. He hadn't quite made it to the table in the kitchen, where he couldn't resist giving the vagina cake a disgusted look, when he realized something was missing from his pocket. I don't believe it. That fucker's got my wand. I'm going to kill him. He was a bit startled when Lupin ambled into the room.
I didn't want you to go, he said politely and tossed him the wand. You're getting some things wrong. I'm going to check in on Elizabeth, and I wish you'd calm down and talk to me afterwards.
Too bad for you, Neville replied rudely. Shouldn't have taken my wand. I'm going home, he added triumphantly.
Well, that's up to you,
Lupin said courteously.
I think you gave Elizabeth your word you'd stay here, though, till the baby was born.
He dropped a piece of parchment in front of Neville and wandered back out.
Elizabeth, don't worry. I'll be right there, and I won't leave until after the baby's born. I promise. Gryffindor honor. Neville.
Elizabeth was pleased when Lupin appeared in the doorway with an expression that suggested she just ripped his heart out and stomped on it.
Can I come back in?
He said hopefully.
I'm quite repentant.
Yes, she wailed. I just wanted you to stop yelling. You're supposed to be petting on me and I'm scared. This has been going on forever, she sobbed. 31 hours!
Lupin sat down on the side of the bed, looking miserable.
I'm sorry, he said in a desolate voice. I just want to make you feel better, and I haven't the slightest idea how.
Well, she sniffed, I don't like this room with all these bright lights. It isn't like home. And I wish you'd come lie down on this bed with me, she added petulantly.
These muggle lights are horrible, Lupin replied conspiratorially. I hate them. Anyway, you're used to lantern lights now,
he added in a satisfied voice, and Elizabeth rolled her eyes. I know he pretends I'm a squib, she thought to herself.
I'll fix this room up just as you want,
he added enthusiastically.
Anything you want.
Elizabeth sat up and clapped her hands.
Oh, I want a great big oversized bed with a whole lot of fancy gold brocade pillows and a really high 4-poster canopy bed with blue silk drapes and a Tiffany chandelier with dim lighting and long dark gold drapes and a giant fireplace with lots of candles on top, just like our bedroom at home,
she finished happily and squealed ecstatically as he waved his wand around and the requested changes appeared.
This is great. This bed is so huge. I love these pillows.
That's not bad.
Lupin looked pleased with himself.
I suppose it's from watching those decorating shows with you. I never could make this stuff before.
He stretched himself out on the bed and pulled her into his arms. She moaned in bitter lip.
This hurts really bad. Can't you do a spell and make it stop hurting?
You know I'm no good at healing spells,
Lupin replied despondently.
Well, I'm rather good with hypnotic spells. Maybe I can make you think it doesn't hurt.
It's the same thing, she gasped out. Hurry up and do it.
Look at me,
he said sternly.
Concentrate.
Both of them held their breath for a few moments.
It doesn't hurt, Elizabeth yelled ecstatically. I can feel it happen, but it doesn't hurt. It's finally stopped hurting,
she started kissing him all over his face.
Oh, this is so wonderful, she bawled. I have the best husband in the best room, and we're going to have the best baby ever, and it's not even going to hurt.
Well, I've done better than Quentin, then,
he said with a wicked smile. Yes, Elizabeth replied gleefully. Yes, you have. This is the best day of my whole entire life.
Well, I think I might have overdone it a bit, he said with a smile. I was really concentrating on making you feel better. Now you're reminding me of someone who's had about 4 goblets of euphoria elixir.
I am feeling better, she yelled and kissed him again. And you're the greatest wizard in the whole wide world!
She jumped blissfully out of bed and trotted over to her suitcase.
What are you doing?
I'm putting on my makeup. I look terrible.
Lupin smiled at this.
Why are you worried about how you look?
I just want to look nice for you,
she replied primly. He watched with some amusement as she began what he privately thought of as her super-secret muggle makeup spy routine, pulling out about 14 different makeup and hair brushes, at least 50 bottles of creams, lotions, powders, lipsticks, eyeliners, and liquids, and then firmly closing the bathroom door so he wouldn't see what she was doing.
"Wonder why you always close that door?"
he called out.
"I think you're up to something with those brushes, especially that one with the long, round handle."
"You be quiet!"
Elizabeth's muffled voice giggled from behind the door. He had to admit, however, the results were certainly impressive.
And I'm not wearing those ugly old pajamas,
she announced gleefully, as she pulled a short blue silk nightgown out of her suitcase.
Why are you putting that on?
He said warily.
You can lock the door, and we can do it in this bed, she squealed delightedly. I love this bed and those pillows. No, we can't,
Lupin answered in a panic-stricken voice.
Oh, I'm sure you're not meant to be doing that. Why not? Maybe it'll hurry things up, she said enthusiastically. Oh, I can't wait to see the baby.
Somebody might apparate into the room,
he replied apprehensively.
We'll get under the covers. They'll never know.
Well, I think they'll know,
he said worriedly. Elizabeth settled herself back on the sheets with a sigh, stretching her arms above her head and spreading her hair around on the bed.
Stop doing that, Lupin said frantically. We are not doing anything.
Fine, she answered sweetly. I want to tell you something, though, she whispered. Come here. It's a secret.
He gave her a terrified look, but leaned over anyway, and she started whispering things in his ear she imagined might make the Jism Queen blush.
Damn. Bloody suffering. Fuck, he said desperately.
That damn wolf done locked me out,
Lucretia shouted as she stomped into the living room and promptly turned on Neville, who had been sulking alone in a recliner.
What?
He replied in a startled voice.
You the wizard, she said accusingly. You can get me in there. She need to have her midwife with her. Something bad could happen, she added direly.
Well, I'm not going in there, Neville said in an outraged voice. You don't operate into somebody's room when they've got the door locked.
You just scared like you was of that big man,
Lucretia told Neville rudely and turned on Harry.
You could do it then.
I'm not doing it, Harry said stubbornly. Why are you bothering them anyway? It's not like you've got a pain potion you can give her or something, he added.
Huh,
she snorted with an offended expression.
Boy who say it a whirl. Chosen one. That don't mean nothing to me.
Neville and George grinned broadly at this. Lucretia glared over at George, who had his wand pointing at Reginald and was somersaulting him in slow motion up around the ceiling.
You apparates in there. Tell him to open that door.
No way, George replied amiably. He'll be pissed. He'll apparate Percy in bed with me in the middle of the night, he shuddered.
Solange, who had re-entered the room in time to hear this last bit of conversation, stopped and gave Neville a threatening look.
You apparate with me in there, Neville. I'll unlock the door. I'm not scared of him.
Who says I'm scared? George scowled. I just don't want snuggle time with Percy, thanks.
Yeah, Harry added.
And last time he was pissed at me, he slammed me up against a wall, he said sullenly.
It's because you called him a coward, Neville snapped. You deserved it.
That wasn't me. That was the Horcrux, Harry shouted back.
Horcrux, Schmorcrux, George told him cheerfully. Anyway, you're not one now, are you?
Maybe I am, Harry hissed with an evil grin. Maybe Percy decided to split his soul into 19 pieces so he could get more power at the ministry.
Percy's whole crust could be a slice of cold pizza, George replied, unimpressed. That fell on the floor. The cat pissed on.
Let's go, Neville,
Solange announced determinedly.
You heard Lucretia. Elizabeth needs her midwife or something bad could happen to her.
Neville gave George a desperate look.
See ya,
George said pleasantly.
He's going to be mad. Neville intoned gloomily. He won't like it.
Don't you care, Miss Elizabeth, die in childbirth?
Lucretia hollered melodramatically, and Neville sighed and offered Solange his arm.
All right, he said angrily and glared at George and Harry. You both better back me up and tell them they made me do this.
They disapparated with a loud crack.
Yeah, it was all his idea, George announced agreeably to Harry, who tried to talk him out of it.
Yeah, Harry added. He wants to talk to them about plants. We told him this wasn't the right time.
The two of them clicked their glasses of fire whiskey together and tossed them back with satisfied expressions. Exactly 30 seconds later, there were two loud cracks and Solange and Neville reappeared. Neville looked rather ill, and Solange started stomping furiously around in a circle, apparently too angry to speak.
Oh! Oh! Ah!
She yelled repeatedly.
What's going on? George said delightedly. What's he done now?
Neville turned brick red and stared at the floor.
Tell him, Neville!
Solange shrieked.
Neville stammered. You don't want to know what he's done. Is doing. Well, I don't think he's doing it anymore, he mumbled.
Maybe he blew up one of the cats,
Ginny suggested helpfully.
Worse than that,
Solange yelled. Everyone fell silent when Lupin stalked into the room.
Have you ever heard of knocking?
He shouted at Neville.
Sorry, Neville yelled back hastily. We didn't think you'd be doing that.
Elizabeth came tripping into the room behind him in her emerald green bathrobe, her face flushed and beaming.
Leave him alone, she said cheerfully. It's not his fault. I talked him into it.
She started giggling.
And just why are you so chipper, missy? Lady Fanshawe screeched. Get back in your room. Have you no shame at all?
Oh, shut it,
Elizabeth replied happily.
I can come out if I want. I feel really good.
You'll need to come see this room Remus made for me. It's the best room ever. I love him, she sighed.
Oh,
Solange gave Lupin a deadly look.
So is that what she had to do to get you to fix up her room?
It wasn't his fault, Elizabeth told Solange with a blissful expression. I knew I could make him do it. He loves it when I talk dirty to him. It makes him crazy, she added triumphantly. Lupin sat down and buried his head in his hands, and George and Harry nearly fell off their chairs laughing.
Let's play cards,
Elizabeth yelled joyfully to no one in particular, and sat herself down cross-legged on the carpet.
I love this day. This is the best day I've ever had.
George sat down across from her and pulled out a deck, whistling.
You have trifled with my feelings most egregiously,
he informed Elizabeth pompously as he dealt her a hand.
And I'm sorry to say it, but you should not be sitting on that floor. In your condition, I find it incomprehensibly inappropriate. My arsehole is closing up as we speak.
Elizabeth burst out laughing, and George grinned wickedly.
Why are you so pissed at Rosie? Jamie whispered as he sat down beside Neville. Ginny thinks it's because of movie night.
Neville started to reply that he didn't want to talk about it, but reminded himself that Jamie, unlike the other muggles, had been quite polite and friendly to him for the past day and a half. Besides, Rosie had fled the room when he was in the kitchen, and just the fact that she was gone had calmed him down considerably.
Well, yeah, I guess Ginny's right, mostly. It's that and some other stuff, too, he added lamely. It just seems that, like, she gets away with everything because she's pretty and, well, she manipulates people.
He said apologetically, but Jamie did not appear upset by this.
And she was trying to humiliate me for no reason and then make me look like the bad guy.
Yeah, Jamie nodded vociferously. That's how she always was when we were growing up. She always made fun of me and humiliated me too, and our dad always took her side.
He scowled.
And he still likes her better, even though she won't even talk to him, and I'm the one that tries to talk to him, tries to make him proud of me.
It's totally unfair, Neville responded hotly.
Thanks, Jamie said in a pleased voice. Honestly, it was nice to you at first because you were Ginny's friend, he admitted sheepishly. But now I think we were really nice and all, and you're definitely smart. And
you want me to be your friend, Neville thought suddenly, because you haven't ever had any. Just like me when I was growing up. And it's probably Rosie's fault you didn't have any because she'd humiliate him in front of people. She's so horrible.
Not really as smart as you think. I could never run a business or anything, Neville replied kindly. Anyway, Ginny said we would get on, and she's right.
Ginny's always right, Jamie grinned.
What if she isn't? Neville replied dryly. You better let her think she is.
Jamie laughed at this and glanced over at Ginny, who was sitting on the floor, letting Natalie and Elizabeth put bows in her hair.
I'm really happy, Jamie thought suddenly.
I am. This is totally weird. Well, Rosie's been pretty nice to me since this summer, Jamie said grudgingly. I mean, we get along pretty good most of the time. I should just ignore her, Neville sighed glumly. Just wish I didn't have to see her. I know she's going to be hanging around Elizabeth and the baby, and I like going over there too, he added resentfully.
Maybe I could ask, you know, like, are you going to see Elizabeth tonight? Jamie said thoughtfully. And if she is, I'll send you an owl. And if you don't get one, then you'll know you're safe.
Thanks, Neville replied happily. Really? Thanks, that would be great. It'd be really bad if we started all that fighting in front of Elizabeth. What if we made the baby cry or something? I mean...
He suddenly realized the conversation in the room had dropped to a lull, and everyone was listening in.
So where is it you're from?
Jamie said quickly, and Neville let out a sigh of relief.
Wingfield Manor,
he replied in a tone so dour it was almost sepulchral.
It's the most horrible manor you've ever seen. The muggles think it's a ruin. It's a few miles from Alphington, you know, in Derbyshire.
Derbyshire's really pretty, Elizabeth beamed. I love old ruined manors and castles. I want to go.
No, you don't, Neville said despondently. It's never more than 40 degrees in there. None of the fireplaces work, and I think Gran put a permanent freezing charm on the whole place. There aren't any windows, and the ceilings are 100 feet high, and the house elves are so nasty they make Weezer look like your best mate. They tried to kill me by shutting me up inside the organ when I was 3, he said grimly. And there are like 500 old oil porches of Longbottom ancestors lining the corridors, and they mutter things like, just give up now, and they're all after you when you walk by.
Solange started giggling.
Can't be that bad.
It's worse, Neville said bleakly. Honestly, it is. It's like the Azkaban of manor houses. There's a mausoleum in the backyard. I used to play in it.
There is not, Elizabeth shrieked happily. I don't believe any of it.
There's mold growing on the walls in the kitchen, Neville continued determinedly, and water drips off it all year long. We used to have a ghoul, but he got so depressed he went off to find someplace else to haunt. One night, half the ceiling in my room caved in, he added dolefully. I liked it best that way, so I didn't tell. And the dining room table's twice as long as the one here, and Gran and Uncle Algy sit at opposite ends and put me in the middle in a wrought iron chair with chains on it. When I was a baby, and the cook's a hag, a real one, and she stirs this big black pot all day and throws in dead animals for flavouring. And the butler's a vampire that walks around chewing on live kittens, and his coffin's in the middle of the sitting room, and he has a lie down in it every afternoon, with the lid open. And my governess was a banshee who made me pick all the bugs out of her hair if I... Stop! Screeched Elizabeth, who had tears running down her face. You're lying! Wish I was, Neville replied morosely. There was a Grindylow in my toilet. A water demon. Will you just try and take... Well, sit on a toilet with a water demon in it. It's kind of hard to relax.
You never told me you had a Grindylow, Lupin said cheerfully. No wonder you were the only third year that knew what it was.
That's not even fair, Ginny said irritably.
And he was the only one in the class that would go anywhere near the tank, Lupin mused. Neville, I should have known.
Yeah, well, who wants to admit they've got a demon in the toilet? Neville responded peevishly. I was just glad you taught us how to capture them. I went back home and snapped the lid on those brittle fingers and it never tried to grab my... bothered me again. And there was a pond in my bathroom, he added indignantly. Gran made me skim the scum off the top every night and put it in a jar. She had a whole collection of those jars, he said darkly. She used them for a hair rinse.
Now that was a horrible, dreadful story, Elizabeth told Neville happily as she snuggled up on the couch with Lupin, a blissful expression emanating from her flushed cheeks.
Now I'm totally depressed, she beamed.
No, I'm the one who's depressed, Neville thought solemnly, because now I have to look at that muggle bitch from hell. Rosie had just reappeared in an incredibly tight and slutty red dress that barely skimmed her ass, and she began flirting so shamelessly with every male besides her brother and Neville, he was sorely tempted to conjure up a shag me, I'm a whore sign for her neck.
Hey, George announced dramatically, let's have a contest.
Yeah, every Gryffindor in the room was predictably enthusiastic about this proposal.
What kind of contest?
Rosie piped up. She had sat herself down so closely beside Harry, she was nearly in his lap, and he kept giving Neville very apologetic looks when he wasn't looking at her dress. It's a contest to see who I hate the most, Neville thought furiously, and the runner-up is you, and in second place, you, and the winner is you. The contest is, George began with a flourish. The front door slid open, and Arthur scuttled in, looking rather battered and sheepish.
Arthur, did you even leave the grounds?
Elizabeth said in an astonished voice.
Well, no. I had a chat with a fellow in his little cottage a few hundred yards from the back door. Which about where I landed in the snow. Nice old fellow. Said he's scared of everyone that lives here, but he needs a job.
Arthur took off his snow-covered cloak and sat down.
Knocked on his door and told him I was fleeing for my life, and he nodded and said, you've come to the right place. Get in here quick before they see you.
Albert, Solange and Elizabeth nodded knowingly.
Hey, George hollered as Arthur and Lupin began apologizing profusely to one another.
Give it over already. We're trying to have a contest here.
A contest? Arthur said eagerly. What sort of a contest?
The contest is...
George paused quite melodramatically until the shouting began.
Bloody Nora, let me finish, he said in an offended tone. The contest... In honor of Neville's happy holiday harangue, is who's had the worst Christmas ever? And the winner gets this!
He waved his wand in spectacular fashion, and a burst of orange fireworks filled the center of the room, clearing to reveal a hand-painted orange box about 4 feet high.
What's in it?
Solange said enthusiastically, and George gave her a mysterious smile.
What's in it depends on who gets it, he replied loftily. It's a gift charm.
My worst Christmas,
Ginny announced loudly and sprang to her feet as if she were reciting in front of a class.
My worst Christmas. Mum was sick, and Dad took all my brothers except Percy to see the Weird Sisters. Percy wouldn't go because he said they were shameless hussies. And he dragged me up to his room and conjured up 100 more prefect badges and made me spend all day polishing them so he could hang them as ornaments on his old tree,
she finished disgustedly.
Percy has his own Christmas tree?
Jamie asked with a puzzled frown.
Oh, yeah, Neville responded gloomily. He calls it the Percy Glory Tree.
And there's a reason.
The reason is it's all about him,
Ginny hollered.
The lights were shaped like giant peas, and he used bits of his own hair for tinsel, and the tree top was a big giant cut-out picture of his head.
You win,
Lupin said immediately.
That wasn't the worst of it, Ginny yelled. He enchanted all those badgers to sing love songs to him. And then that giant head on the top started spinning round and talking. It was saying things like, "My stars, Percy has certainly outdone himself this year, and he'll make Minister of Magic before he's 25, you mark my words."
She marched triumphantly back to her seat as everyone applauded.
Excellent, Arthur shouted.
Not bad, George grinned thoughtfully.
That was good,
Rosie hissed, and Jenny beamed happily.
Mine is better, Harry declared. One year, Dudley got 62 presents for Christmas, and I got a turnip. And then Dudley wiped his nose on the turnip, and then he ate the turnip. And then Uncle Vernon made me clip his toenails, because he was too fat to reach them.
My worst Christmas, Elizabeth interrupted merrily, was when Mother and Dad went to an all-day party and left me to watch Solange and Loretta. Solange strapped a big red Christmas ornament on her nose and made antlers out of branches from a tree, and climbed up on the roof and started yelling that she was a reindeer. The neighbours called the police and they shouted at her through this big bullhorn that she'd better get down, and she screamed that she wouldn't because she was Rudolph and had a very shiny nose and all the other reindeer loved her. And then Loretta ate all the Christmas cookies and threw up on my new high-heeled suede shoes and ruined them. My first pair of fancy shoes. And when Mother got home, she punished me by taking away my kitten.
That's true, Solange said angrily.
She did. Elizabeth was crying for her kitten all night long.
That's horrible, Harry and Rosie yelled simultaneously.
Just you wait,
Lupin hissed ominously at Caroline.
You're the worst mother ever,
Ginny said vituperatively, and Lady Fanshawe let out an unrepentant snort.
Well, Elizabeth was responsible for them, she screeched. Neighbours calling the police. I could scarcely leave my home for the shame of it.
And you'd better watch your mouth, missy, she swung around and glowered at Solange,
because we have a court date coming up in 3 weeks, and somebody's going to jail.
She isn't going to jail,
Lupin told her coldly.
Ha! Lady Fanshawe screamed. This isn't your wizard gamut business. It's Her Majesty's Court of Law. And I have the best barrister in England, and I'm old. I'm getting out my walker, and I'm not wearing any of my makeup. Or putting my teeth in, she said vindictively. I'll barely be able to hobble up to the platform.
Then you look like shite for nothing, you old she-wolf,
Lupin snapped,
since I'll be standing in the back staring at the judge, and I'm rather good with hypnotic spells, as you may have noticed.
He smirked and indicated Elizabeth, who was jubilantly singing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for a delighted Arthur.
I'll tell them I'm afraid of you, Lady Fanshawe replied haughtily, and then they won't let you in.
Pity,
Lupin replied in his Snape imitation voice.
It's awfully difficult for me to get into places where I'm not meant to go. Haven't ever been able to manage it.
Lady Fanshawe spluttered, opened and then shut her mouth several times, and finally let out a reverberating screech and fled the room.
She'll drop that case now, Richard assured Solange happily. She knows when she's been outmaneuvered, I say. Good show, old boy.
Apparently, now that Lupin and Caroline were fighting, Richard found him quite a jolly fellow indeed.
Anywho, Richard continued loudly, my worst Christmas was when I was a boy and our oven broke down. On Christmas Day, I tell you, the turkey and the stuffed pheasant and the roast goose were all ruined. Ruined, I say. It was a ghastly Christmas. We had to eat sandwiches, he shuddered.
My worst Christmas was when I brought this girl I met at a bar home, see? Trying to impress her.
Victor slurred drunkenly.
I was all dressed up, see? Then Elizabeth pours her old gallon of eggnog on me bloody head. Couldn't have it and leave it.
We were married,
Elizabeth yelled.
Well, does it have to embarrass me?
Victor mumbled solemnly.
My worst Christmas was when Mum made me and Fred stay at the castle because she needed a break, and twinkly old Dumbles and Minerva took a holes and left Snivellus in charge of the castle, George announced cheerfully. He confiscated all of our presents and gave us detentions on Christmas Day. Christmas Day! Went to clean out Filch's toilet, and there was shit so scary in there we were screaming like girls. When we got out of the bathroom, that greasy fucker was sprawled out on Filch's sofa drinking fire whiskey and gloating at us. Filch was sitting next to him wearing Fred's Weasley sweater, I guess because his had the F on it, and mine was on Mrs. Norris. Snape had shrunk it down, bastard.
My worst Christmas, Neville proclaimed grimly,
was when the house elves locked me up in the mausoleum for the whole day.
I thought Gryffindors were supposed to be brave, Rosie said hatefully. That is so lame. You're afraid of ghosts. You should have been a Hufflepuff.
That's low, George whistled. I was 4 years old, Neville bellowed with outrage, and they shut me up in a vault with a corpse. He'd been dead for 300 years, and you should have been a Slytherin, except they'd say you were too nasty.
Oh, good one,
Ginny said happily and clapped her hands.
What? It was, not taking sides, she told Rosie defensively. Neville was afraid of my boobs,
Rosie screamed triumphantly, and snorts of laughter were heard around the room. You're going to be so sorry you said that, Neville thought wrathfully. Just wait and see what turns up in your bed tonight. I still remember what that corpse looked like.
My worst Christmas was when Dad took me and Rosie to the mall and told us we could get whatever we wanted, Jamie blurted out. Rosie spent, 3 hours picking out clothes. And then it was my turn. She ran out in the middle of the mall and yelled, Jamie hasn't got any balls. Then she tripped me and I sprained my ankle, so we had to go home.
That figures, Neville thought venomously. She ruins everything for everybody. I bet she didn't even get in trouble.
She didn't even get in trouble, Jamie added stubbornly.
You having big tantrums on the floor, Rosie yelled furiously. Then you started kicking my dressing room door and yelling that I stuffed my bra.
Boo fucking who, Henry told Jamie condescendingly. My worst Christmas was when Kenny showed up on my doorstep with his lava lamp and his Pat Benatar posters and a garbage bag full of dirty underwear and weed falling out of his pockets. Then he tells me the cops and the drug lords are all after him and his landlord kicked him out.
Yeah, dude, Kenny said sulkily from the floor. I had the worst Christmas that day too, man. I was starving, dude, and I totally wanted a McDonald's cheeseburger and fries, and Henry wouldn't take me, man. It sucked ass.
What? Jamie said disgustedly. That's your worst Christmas ever?
It was majorly stoned, man,
Kenny replied defensively.
I was jonesing for that cheeseburger, dude. Thought I was gonna die, man.
He let out a cackle as Reginald's corpse floated overhead.
That is the stupidest thing I ever heard, Harry burst out angrily. Nobody cares about any old cheeseburger. You're even whinier than Dudley.
Oh, yeah?
Kenny screeched.
What do you know, dude? Do you fight the Telmarines? What about Prince Rabidash, man? I bet you never took on the Tizrock, dude.
Well, not from Narnia, Harry yelled back. Can't you remember anything?
I remember your house sucked, dude,
Kenny replied snidely and cackled loudly.
You invited me over. Didn't even offer me any food, man.
I hope you never get your dick back,
Harry hissed. What? The crowd chimed in, apparently quite bewildered.
I think you said that in Parseltongue, Harry, Lupin told him kindly. I never speak in Parseltongue, Harry yelled with a horrified expression. I haven't done it in years. It's Kenny. He has a way of bringing out the best in people,
Henry told him laconically. Ask Rosie what he said, Neville commented nastily. I'm sure she understood it.
I don't speak Parseltongue,
Rosie screamed and launched a lamp across the room in Neville's direction.
I bet you do, Neville replied self-righteously as the lamp turned and smashed itself against the wall.
And I would have sent that to your head, except I'm a Gryffindor and we're meant to be chivalrous.
Well, enough of that, Arthur announced firmly. My worst Christmas was the beginning of the First War. I was only 33 years old and had a wife and 3 boys already. Then my wife tells me that for my Christmas present she's got wonderful news for me. Had a wonderful news since you're expecting twins. Twins!
He shouted wrathfully.
Yeah, Dad, George said pleasantly. Right here.
Oh, Arthur muttered.
Yes, so you are. Sorry.
My worst Christmas, Rosie screeched, is this one because Neville is in my house.
It's going to get a lot worse, Neville thought spitefully, when you wake up next to the rotted old remains of my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather.
Okay, Harry broke in impatiently. Let's vote.
Wait, Elizabeth said stubbornly. I want that present. You haven't let Remus tell his story yet, and you know nobody's going to have a more tragic Christmas story than he will.
She finished gleefully. The entire crowd let out a collective groan of dismay.
Damn, Harry said disgustedly. She's right. Why didn't you even start it up?
He glared at George.
We shouldn't let him play, Ginny said darkly. It's not our fault he's had his worst life ever.
Lupin gave Elizabeth an incredulous look.
What was that about? Well, how pathetic do you want me to be?
He said irritably.
Very, very pathetic,
Elizabeth replied sweetly.
And maybe if you win me that present, I'll send you some of those owls you want when you're gone.
Right,
Lupin declared enthusiastically.
Worst Christmas ever. Sirius and I were sitting in our tent full of rats. It was pissing rain outside.
We just finished this 15-hour battle where Benji Fenwick, our fellow Gryffindor classmate who lived in the tent next to us for 2 years, was the nicest fellow ever, got blasted into a million pieces right in front of us. Right in front of us. As in, he was in our hair. The girl I was in love with was married to my nephew, and the Death Eaters had killed my parents the week before, and it was 2 days after full moon, he added with relish. I had 6 broken ribs, and half my ankle was torn off, but I hadn't had time to get to St. Mungo's because of this battle. I was fighting in the rain, hopping on one leg and trying to breathe the whole damn day, and we hadn't eaten for a week because the rations were out and nobody was getting paid. Not that it matters when your whole family is either dead or married to the only woman you'll ever love. So, I was lying on my bunk, wishing it would explode, and Sirius said, "You know what I just thought of, mate? It's Christmas Day. 'Cause we'd forgotten."
He sat back and looked pleased with himself.
"All right, we get it," Harry shouted. "We get it. Damn." "You tell them it isn't true,"
Lupin challenged Arthur.
"It's true," Arthur sighed gloomily. "Every long, drawn-out detail. That was a horrible day. Remus kept whining on and on about those broken ribs," he added irritably and put on a gasping face like a fish out of water. "I can't breathe. Lieutenant Weasley told me 20 times. Though he did look a bit blue around the mouth," he added grudgingly.
"Ha!" Elizabeth shrieked ecstatically. "Ha, ha, ha! You beat that with your old 'I didn't have any turkey, and I'd clip Vernon's toenails, and I'd listen to Percy's giant rotating head. Ha!" "Yeah, you win," Ginny said sulkily. "Nobody's ever had a worse Christmas than that. Ever. Like in the history of the universe."
"Yeah," George muttered and kicked the box towards Lupin. "No use even voting now. Fucker."
"Wait a second," Harry said suspiciously to Arthur. "So you were there for that 15-hour battle in the rain where Fenwick gets killed. That wasn't your worst Christmas ever?"
"Well," Arthur replied thoughtfully, "I wasn't hopping around fighting injured, and I had a wife at home, and my parents weren't dead, and I certainly didn't have to share a tent with Sirius Black. Now, that twins' disaster was definitely worse," he shuddered.
"Still here, Dad," George yelled.
"Do you mean you didn't have to share a tent with Sirius Black?" Lupin said angrily.
"Yeah," Timothy hollered threateningly and jumped up on the coffee table.
"Yeah, what's that supposed to mean?"
"It means you got on my nerves," Arthur replied unrepentantly. "A boy never did what he was told."
"He did what he was told in battle," Lupin said defensively. "Maybe not on our days off, when you wanted to make sure we hadn't any fun at all," he finished sulkily.
"You two blew up a train," Arthur shouted. "You snuck into the ministry and put a dead troll in Fudge's chair. You turned everything in the atrium pink. You entered that muggle bar and transfigured all the chairs into trashy muggle girls with boobs and bikinis, and who gets in trouble for it? Me! Albus told me I shouldn't have ever let you out of my sight. He played favorites," he added darkly.
"He did not," Harry shouted wrathfully.
"Yeah, right," George replied calmly. "Keep telling yourself that, chosen one. Couldn't even tell me and Fred apart, and we were in his office 3 times a week.
Never could remember Ron's name. He'd ask Hermione when you weren't around," he added.
"Tell him he's lying," Harry demanded and gestured wildly towards Lupin.
"I don't know,"
he mumbled. "Yeah, you do," George replied complacently. "Sirius said you were his fair-haired golden boy. Mooney got away with everything, everything. And God forbid he looked like he was having a bad day or something. That twinkly old fuck would practically leap off the high table and chase his little buddy down."
"Could we help it?" Lupin said self-righteously to Harry. "There were like 1,000 students in that school. Couldn't get to know all of them."
"He liked you two the best because you were both pathetic,"
Ginny announced heatedly.
"Pathetic. Remus was the poor little werewolf boy, and Harry had that damn scar."
"Why is I ever like you?"
Harry shouted back.
"She's just jealous,"
Lupin told Harry with a yawn, and Ginny shot him a venomous look.
"I'm gonna write a prequel," she snarled, "and you're gonna have grey hair and scars on your face and wear brown cardies when you're 15 years old."
Lupin and Harry exchanged disgusted glances.
"I'm going to write an anonymous letter to the Prophet," Lupin replied complacently, "and ask them why there's someone in the Order who failed defense in her second year."
"Shoes!"
Elizabeth yelled ecstatically as she delved into the box.
"I love these shoes! This is the best day ever! Thank you!"
She gave Lupin a brilliant smile.
"What are you thanking him for?"
Ginny said irritably.
"For being a tragical fucker? George made the charmed box."
"I'm not a tragical fucker," Lupin replied cheerfully. "I didn't turn out so bad in the end."
"Who's that?" Neville said incredulously. "What could possibly make a day like that any better?"
"We decided to cheer ourselves up, so we waited until Arthur apparated home and blew up his tent."
What? Arthur shouted. I had a lot of batteries in that tent. Plugs, power cords, an electrical drill. Everything Molly wouldn't let me have at home. I had a muggle blender under my bunk and I hadn't taken it apart yet. You said Death Eaters did it, he snarled accusingly.
No, I didn't, Lupin replied complacently. When you came back, you started yelling, what the hell happened to my tent? And I said, damn, those Death Eaters suck, which was true. It wasn't my fault you took it the wrong way.
Yeah, Tim yelled hotly. It wasn't his fault.
Be quiet, Elizabeth told Timothy happily. Everyone quit fussing. This is a great day. This is the best day ever. I love these shoes.
Chocolate? Quentin shook his head.
Fire whiskey?
Don't bother. Why'd you come up here? Because I wanted to be alone, Quentin snapped out. He and Lupin were sprawled out on the carpet in William's empty sitting room, leaning against the wall, since there wasn't any furniture.
You thought I couldn't find you?
I knew you could find me. I didn't imagine you'd leave Elizabeth.
She feels great, Lupin said cheerfully. She isn't having any pain. I did this hypnotic spell and convinced her she felt better. She really feels better, he smiled. It's rather like when she drank all that fire whiskey, without the staggering and the fascination with things that float.
What do you get to do this? Quentin yelled. You can do these damn spells, but I can't give Solange any fucking magical chocolate.
Now, Lupin said sternly, you tell me the difference.
Oh, for God's sake, Quentin barked out. I suppose the difference is that Elizabeth asked you to do this fucking spell.
Right in one, Lupin replied pleasantly. If someone asks you to perform a spell on them or for them, that's not a problem. If they don't want it and you do it anyway, that's assault. Could get you 15 years in Azkaban if you were a wizard, he added knowledgeably. You sure you don't want some scotch? I could murder a pint.
Fine, Quentin replied irritably as Lupin waved up a bottle. Hell is it you want from me?
Who said I wanted anything?
You've tracked me down to interrogate me, he replied impatiently. Don't think I don't know it. Just get on with it.
I tracked you down because I was concerned about you,
Lupin said in an offended tone. Is this what you usually say to your victims?
Well, no, usually it's something like, this is not going to end well for you,
he replied cheerfully and passed him the bottle.
And the reason I was concerned is that dishonesty is quite out of character for you. Why did you do it?
There was a long silence, and Quentin looked out the window. What would you do, he said finally, if Elizabeth told you she didn't love you anymore? What would you do to change her mind? Lupin appeared rather stunned by this.
Anything,
he said quietly.
Anything at all.
Miss Elizabeth, Lucretia intoned dourly with a stern wag of her finger. You gets back in that room. I done told you, since he put that spell on you, you might have that baby any minute, you wouldn't even know it. No, ma'am, you wouldn't.
No, Elizabeth replied blissfully. I'm talking to Solange, and I like it out here.
Actually, she thought to herself, she was listening to Solange, who was recounting the chocolate debacle with a great deal of gesticulation and drama. The crowd had thinned considerably after 9. The Weasleys and Harry took their orange peel and departed. Richard went off to bed at 8, closely followed by Shala and her entourage. And Henry, Victor, and Kenny made a break for the 17th floor when the floating Christmas corpse began chasing them. Angel yanked Loretta up from behind the couch, where she had been angrily decapitating paper dolls, while Jamie dragged Neville upstairs to show him his room, and Rosie stomped off to the kitchen to drink sherry and sulk. Teddy and Tim, delighted by their total lack of adult supervision, had disappeared long ago.
Well, Slosh said angrily as she finished up her story, isn't he the most horrible person in the entire universe?
No, Elizabeth said in her practical voice.
That would be Voldemort, although he definitely shouldn't have done it. It's deceitful. But some of it was your own fault,
she finished cheerfully.
What? Solange screeched. How is that? Because you're a big tease, Elizabeth declared decisively. Look what you're wearing. Your boobs are busting out of that top. And I know you were hanging all over him, batting your eyelashes and putting your hand on his arm,
she finished with satisfaction.
I was not. You weren't there.
I don't have to be there, Elizabeth replied complacently.
I know how you are, and I told you this whole friends thing is retarded. If you're going to stay with him, you might as well do it. It's just making you crabbier when you don't. Well, maybe it is,
Solange wailed.
I am crabby, and you're probably right about me being depressed. I am depressed.
As if to emphasize this point, she burst into tears.
Oh, don't cry, Elizabeth said soothingly. Everything's going to get better, I promise. Here's what you need to do, she added authoritatively. Go see Cynthia and have your hormones checked and ask her about an antidepressant. Anybody who's married to Quentin needs to be on an antidepressant. And the next thing you need to do is remember you're married to the richest person in Britain and he feels guilty. You could get him to take you on that castle tour in southern France like you've always wanted. Well, I do want to go on that castle tour, Slash said regretfully. I do. Well, I just don't want to use him for his money. I don't ever want to do that.
You've earned it, Elizabeth replied cheerfully. I was talking to Remus about this. Even he says you've earned it. You know how he is about doing the right thing. Slash seemed placated by this statement.
Well, maybe you're right. Who knows if he'll ever feel guilty like this again. And he might like it too. All he ever does is work.
He'll like it if you're doing it with him, Elizabeth replied practically.
And I bet he'll buy you lots of clothes, she hissed dramatically. Lots of clothes and shoes. And you can get presents for everybody. You can get the baby presents, she enthused.
Solange beamed at her.
You're the best sister anyone could ever have, she declared excitedly. And I love Remus too. Look how he got Mother off my back and I haven't even been nice to him.
Ha, he's going to do something terrible to her, Elizabeth proclaimed gleefully.
I know it. Remember when you said I cried all night for that kitten and he said, just you wait? That means he's going to do something awful, she said with relish. He hates her. He doesn't even feel guilty about biting her anymore. The other day, she told me I was a great fat cow and I started bawling and he yelled at her that he wished he'd ripped her throat out. Good for him, Solange declared. It's not like we can do anything to her. I trip her and she breaks her old hip and tries to put me in jail. I say poor Reginald's lucky he's dead.
Miss Lisbeth? Lucretia hollered as she stopped back into the room and leaned threateningly into Elizabeth's face. You get yourself back in that room, I done told you. I ain't telling you again.
Oh, all right, Elizabeth announced cheerfully. You needn't squash your boobs all up in my face. I'm going.
When Quentin's cell phone rang, Lupin got up and politely walked across the room.
What's wrong?
Quentin scowled at the phone.
Oh, I see.
He started smiling as the caller launched into what was apparently a rather long-winded account.
Yeah, we'll be right down, he said as he snapped the phone shut.
What's that about?
Lupin asked curiously.
That was Rosie, Quentin replied thoughtfully.
She's awfully excited. Couldn't hardly hear her for all the bawling and carrying on, though.
What are you saying?
He said with a bewildered look. For someone who's so damn smart, Quentin thought affectionately, you certainly can be one dumb fucker.
Sorry, he smiled. The baby's born. Elizabeth's fine.
He stressed kindly. She's great. Rosie said she's never seen her so happy. Lupin immediately sat down on the floor.
Are you all right? Quentin frowned. Here, eat some of your chocolate.
Yeah, I'm just relieved. I'm relieved. You said she's fine.
She is absolutely fine, Quentin said sternly.
It's all over. You can calm the fuck down and resume your previous level of weirdness.
Right.
Lupin still looked as if he'd been stunned.
Aren't you going to ask me what it is? Quentin grinned.
What is it?
He said blankly.
The baby, Quentin replied with a smirk. B-A-B-Y, remember? There's a baby involved here.
It's a girl.
Really?
Lupin jumped to his feet.
Yeah, they do come out that way sometimes, you know.
Would you like to see her?
Right. Come on, let's go.
Lupin said impatiently and promptly disappeared with a bang.
Don't worry about me, Quentin yelled into the air. Don't bother taking me with you.
Just take the damn elevator down 13 floors.
Asshole.
Come and see the baby, Elizabeth yelled happily when Quentin entered the bedroom.
Oh, she's the prettiest baby you ever saw. Get over here quick. She was born 3 minutes after midnight,
Rosie's voice screeched excitedly from within the mob packed around the bedside.
She's a Christmas baby. My cousin, my girl cousin.
That's bloody excellent. This poor kid doesn't have a chance in hell. She's got Daddy the crazy werewolf and his pack of lunatic friends, her green-haired brother and that prehistoric shouting thesaurus of infuriation that I suppose is her great-great-great-fucking-grandfather, homicidal Auntie Loretta and her guardian Nurse Ratchet, that vulture-hatted bitch of a grandmother who tried to rape my gardener. Oh, and one mustn't forget the frightfully bad-tempered Uncle Quentin, who is the antithesis of all that is good and noble and Gryffindorly, shouts all damn day long and is far too interested in seating charts. No kid deserves this shit. Oh, hell, I forgot about her alcoholic cousin Victor and his sidekicks, the perennially bored, white, middle-aged teenager and his little brother Druggy the Dickless Wonder. They're sure to be a good influence. I think I'll buy her a pony. She deserves it.
Am I allowed to see this baby? He demanded as he made his way towards the mob.
Good God, let the poor thing breathe.
Yes, you can, Elizabeth shouted joyfully. Everybody move over!
The crowd obediently parted, and Quentin glanced down at the plump little bundle Elizabeth held tightly to her chest. She had large dark blue eyes with long sweeping black lashes, flushed cheeks, perfect red lips, and a head full of riotous black curls. Well, I suppose she had to inherit some decent genetics. She'll definitely be smart as hell. Maybe she'll be kind-hearted as her much-too-forgiving father, and as no-nonsense as her mother, formerly known as the bane of my existence. And, of course, she'll be pretty, since Mummy is reasonably attractive. All right, she's just about as fucking gorgeous as my wife, who hates me. And Daddy's the desperate dream boy of homosexual bloodsuckers united, and probably his badass black boss as well. Damn, that fucker even scares me.
She's beautiful, he told Elizabeth gruffly. Thank God she looks like you.
His eyes met Elizabeth's for a moment. I'm sorry I said she was a stupid mistake, and I'm sorry I misjudged you. Forgive me? Elizabeth beamed at him.
Of course,
she said sweetly, and Lupin gave her a startled look.
And I'm sorry, too. Do you want to hold her?
Lupin appeared mortally terrified at this suggestion.
Do you think that's a good idea?
He said, and gave Quentin an apologetic glance.
I mean, you don't seem to be the baby-loving type. Have you ever held one?
Oh, for God's sake! Quentin shouted. Give me the baby!
Quentin is very good with babies, Remus, Elizabeth said sternly. He is. He was always carrying one of those twins round, and he's very careful. Now let him have the baby,
she said loudly as Lupin assumed a stubborn expression. Lupin handed him the baby with a look that said he was only doing this under duress, and Quentin and Elizabeth exchanged exasperated expressions. Quentin held her out with a practiced air and perused her thoughtfully.
Not bad. I'd say you did rather well on your assignment.
Finally figure that out, did you?
Lupin grinned.
Finally. Should I even ask if this baby has a name?
Yes, she has a name, Elizabeth said proudly. It's Rihanna Antoinette, for both of our sisters.
And since both of those names shorten to Annie, Lupin added, that's what we'll call her.
Quentin smiled at this.
Annie, your fucking song, that's so sweet I may become violently ill.
You hush up,
Elizabeth said sternly.
I'm teasing. I'll sing it to her. When we're alone. Riding, that is. I thought I'd get her a pony.
What?
Lupin shouted. In a few years, you eejit. When she's four, I suppose.
Four? You think you're dragging her off on one of those bloodthirsty beasts when she's 4 years old? Remus,
Elizabeth said firmly.
I started riding when I was four. And that was with my father, and I survived. Horses just don't like you because you're a werewolf. They won't have any problem with her.
What? Quinn yelled. You couldn't possibly have told me this before I nearly got thrown off my damned horse trying to keep you on yours.
You were the one always on about me about riding,
Lupin replied with a smirk.
I figured I'd let you give it a go. That horse almost killed me,
he added solemnly.
That was a death-eater horse.
That horse was a 13-year-old mare that was retired from a petting zoo. Timothy rode that horse when he was 3.
Lupin ignored this and glanced over at Neville.
Can I have a word?
Sure. Neville replied with an astonished expression, and the two of them strolled out into the corridor. Rosie motioned her father to the doorway, where she was straining to hear what was being said in the hall.
What do you think they're talking about?
She asked him suspiciously.
No idea. Maybe which village they're planning to burn down next?
Dad,
Rosie said suddenly.
Do you think I'd have been in Gryffindor?
Why are you wondering about that?
Something Remus said to me when we were talking about Neville. He said I was a very determined person and I never lacked courage.
So that's it, Quentin thought. You're wondering if you'll get another chance with the fucking toad lover.
God, I hope so. I'm sure you'd move him in along with his mother, the mute, and his grandmother, and her vulture hat, and 300 plants, and 45 toads.
Well, I suppose one can never have too many toads at the dinner table. I'm sure Parks would agree.
You would have been Gryffindor,
he replied impassively, and Rosie beamed.
What about you?
She said archly. Quentin listened for a moment to Lupin and Neville's serious voices, although he couldn't make out what they were saying.
Nah, those two are the real Gryffindors, he said gruffly. I'm just a Slytherin trying to make good.
Like Snape,
Rosie shot back.
So I've been told,
he replied dryly.
Elizabeth and I were thinking,
Lupin said to Neville with his serious expression.
Since you did save my life in the battle, and Elizabeth and Annie's that day in the barn, you've been rather her guardian angel. Would you be her godfather?
Neville stammered. That'd be great. I can't believe you asked me. Wow, he picked me. I can't believe it. Out of everybody, he picked me. Guess I'm not the one left out anymore.
Why wouldn't I ask you? Thank you.
Can I hold her again?
You don't think you'll drop her?
Lupin said with an amused expression. No, Neville replied determinedly.
No, I don't.
Lupin handed Annie over, and Neville found he couldn't take his eyes off of her peacefully sleeping face.
I'm going to give you whatever you want, he thought. You'll see. I'll be the best godfather ever. When Elizabeth woke up late in the morning, Annie was lying on Lupin's chest, squinting and looking about with inquisitive eyes.
How are you feeling?
He said.
Wonderful, she beamed. I mean, kind of sore. I guess the spell wore off, but I'm still just as happy.
Lupin leaned over and kissed her forehead.
See how smart she is? She's looking at everything, Elizabeth said happily. She's so pretty. Do you think she's a muggle?
Too soon to tell, Lupin replied cheerfully. Anyway, who cares?
I'm always going to tell her how wonderful she is, Elizabeth said determinedly. All the time.
I think she's a very fortunate little girl, Lupin said thoughtfully.
Why do you say that?
Because she has a mum who will love her fiercely and forever,
he replied seriously. Elizabeth looked up at the baby, and her face was wet with tears.
If I know anything about love, she whispered, it's because of you.